can join the show if you want. The number for you is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. Here tonight, it's Ian.
And Chris.
And nobody.
And phones are open as always. Wish I had some good news to share tonight. I mean, I guess there is a little bit of good news, and that is that, you know, the cryptocurrency prices have been trending upward in the last couple of months. On the downside, the federal government in the United States is on a full-on assault, and has been for some time, against the world of cryptocurrency. We know it personally because they came after some of the show hosts here, including me and you, Nobody,
That's
as well
true.
As Aria, in the Crypto 6 case, and that was for simply selling Bitcoin peer-to-peer, as they call it. But they're also going big. They've been going after mega companies in the crypto space. They targeted Kraken, which is a big crypto exchange, a few weeks ago. And they told Kraken they were going to bring a case against them if they didn't settle. And Kraken did decide to settle for $30 million. But the case was going to be in regards to... Yeah. And they figured that would be cheaper to just pay the $30 million to the SEC and then end their staking program, which is what... that particular case was about.
Okay, I was going to say, are they required to change their business model? Because if not, then it was just pure extortion.
Yep, they cannot offer the staking service that they were offering to their U.S. customers anymore. So that's the requirement there. And so when that happened, it wasn't hard to predict that they were going to go after anybody else offering staking. And Coinbase... which is, of course, the company that probably is maybe a little larger than Kraken. I'm not sure who does more volume at the moment. They're both very, very large exchanges in the United States.
They're more obedient than Kraken, though.
They definitely are. Yeah. Coinbase has been cozying up to the regulators from the word go, basically.
Didn't help.
And no, as it turns out, it did not help them one iota.
You know who else I think they went after recently was... was it Paxos or I'm not sure.
Paxos, which is a company that was assisting Binance, the world's largest exchange, in issuing their own stablecoin.
And they came to New Hampshire and testified at one of our hearings on crypto, if you recall.
There was a Paxos rep that's testified against me at the Crypto 6 trial. I think you might be thinking
Am I confusing that with
really?
There was another crypto exchange that came to New Hampshire. I think you're confusing I
might
with
be
that,
you
with that
might
one.
Be right.
Now when you say against you, did she say anything that was particularly inflammatory or just factually report your transaction?
Yeah, she was just on the stand as a witness from Paxos, which was one of the exchanges that, you know, we were buying Bitcoin from and such.
Okay.
So, I'm trying to remember the one that you're referring to, Chris. It was Poloniex. That was the one that...
It was started with a P.
Yeah,
this is why I'm getting them confused.
Yeah. Yep. So Poloniex, which is...
this was years ago, too.
Yeah, this is
so,
So they're going after the big guys. They got their way with Kraken without even really having to lift a finger besides typing up the threat letter to Kraken. And they're now doing the same thing with Coinbase. Now, interestingly, the Coinbase had made a statement when Kraken folded. Coinbase spoke out and said, well, we believe we're doing staking legally and we are prepared to fight. Well, a few weeks later, the fight just got brought to them. The SEC has now issued what is called a Wells Notice to Coinbase, which is a heads up, basically, that they're intending to bring probably a civil case. I doubt this is going to be criminal charges, but they do intend to bring a case against Coinbase. This, according to CNBC, they sent the Wells Notice warning the company that identified potential violations of U.S. security law. Coinbase's shares fell 12% in extended trading after the news broke on Wednesday.
Now, the good news there is that nothing about staking is essential to the business model of an exchange.
That's true.
It's an extra service they offer, but not offering that service will not damage your ability to buy crypto.
Right. Unless, of course, this lawsuit puts the exchange out of business, right? Like if like what happened to our friends over at Library, LBRY.com, which Library has already lost in their case versus, or the SEC versus library in that case. They already lost that case. The SEC used a federal judge to determine that the library token, which is as much of a utility token as you could possibly fathom, it was not designed for, you know, number go up purposes. It was not designed as an investment token or whatever. It was designed to be utilized on the library blockchain for the purposes of posting video content and such to the web.
Do you have any idea what their thinking was behind not appealing that decision? I mean, if it was me, I would be reaching out to all of the exchanges and all of the whales and saying, look, we don't have a lot of money anymore. They stole it all.
Yep, that was the number one factor, I think.
But, you know, if this precedent stands, then one of you is going to have to fight it. Mm-hmm. But we already have standing to fight it.
There's another case that's similar to it, and I think there's more people behind that.
The Ripple case?
Yeah, the Ripple case. So that might be one aspect of this, too.
Which apparently the hearings on Ripple have now ended at whatever court it's in, whatever federal court, and now they're just waiting on the judge to rule. So it could be 2 weeks, it could be 2 months, it could be a year, you know, who knows how long it's going
to
take. And there's an interesting theory being put forward in this Ripple case that basically if the FEC or whoever brought it, SEC, yeah. I guess.
It was them.
Did not give them notice that what they were doing was illegal, that basically yeah, right. it wasn't.
Well, I wish that would work in my case.
Yeah, I don't think it works in criminal cases. Mm-hmm. I think it works only in, you know, cases for privileged people.
Yeah, I think the SEC's argument to counter that is, well, you're on notice. We filed a lawsuit against you. That's how we give notice these days.
Mm.
Yeah.
That would be certainly interesting argument.
There's also a difference. There's another big difference between library and Ripple. They're greatly one is greatly bigger than the other. So
for sure. Ripple's what, still one of the top five or so coins, or top ten? It's in the top ten.
Yeah,
still, I believe.
But you know, I guess what I'm trying to say is that you know, the SEC can crucify little guys, and you know, the big ones can survive because, you know, they're making money. Library hadn't gotten beyond its, you know, startup phase, right? It wasn't raking in the money. I guess they had started thinking about like business models for their Odyssey platform, but that's, you know, that wasn't bringing in money, and I don't even
Odyssey
know if they...
is still not doing too hot from what I understand, so they could definitely use some support if you want to. You can support Odyssey directly. They have a $3 a month subscription that gets rid of all the advertisements and such, and you can also go to our Odyssey channel at video.freetalklive.com. For listeners that don't know, Odyssey is the platform that's using the library protocol in the background.
One of them.
I don't know of any others. There could be others, I suppose.
I believe Jeremy testified to there being like something like 40 others.
What? Okay.
You weren't at the hearing.
Yeah, I missed that detail.
Yeah. But there's others. I mean, it was something around that number. It wasn't a lot, but it was enough.
Wow. Okay, well, I never heard of them, but maybe one of them will rise to prominence. But for right now, Odyssey is certainly the place to go.
Oh, for sure.
For that, and they're the one that's sort of tied directly to library, in that the Odyssey company came out from library. It used to be a part of library, and then they kind of spun it off into its own thing. But I don't even remember where I was going with that. But Odyssey's great. The token is useful, but they went after them anyway, and they won. And the SEC won that one. So it's hard to be optimistic that Ripple is going to have success in this particular case. It's also hard to be optimistic that Coinbase is going to have success. But unlike Kraken, Coinbase is intending to fight this thing, apparently. According to Coinbase... Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, this is Coinbase in a regulatory filing. They said this: based on discussions with staff, the company believes these potential enforcement actions would relate to aspects of the company's spot market staking service Coinbase Earn, which is their name for that, Coinbase Prime, don't know what that is, and Coinbase Wallet, said Coinbase in a regulatory filing. They said further, the potential civil action may seek injunctive relief, disgorgement, and civil penalties, which is pretty standard. But right now, it sounds like Coinbase is speculating on what this is going to involve. The SEC apparently has not revealed yet the aspect of Coinbase's business that they're going to be targeting.
So that's normally done in the complaint, as I understand it.
Haven't gotten that far
yet. So it sounds like the lawsuit is not even filed.
Correct. They've just been given what is called a Wells notice, which is essentially a heads up. It says here, a Wells notice is typically one of the final steps before the SEC formally issues charges. It generally lays out the framework of the regulatory argument and offers the potentially accused an opportunity to rebut the SEC's claims.
So a Wells notice tells you that there's not far to go.
That's right. We're coming. We're coming. We're coming for you, bro. Yeah.
I wonder if that's also to notify somebody that they basically have to preserve evidence. Once you're aware that there's some sort of pending civil litigation,
you can't delete stuff or whatever.
Have to reserve stuff, yeah.
The SEC's-
I think it's usually a subpoena that would specify what stuff.
But I think even before a subpoena comes, you can't delete stuff if you know there's a pending, some sort of pending civil action against you.
Apparently the Wells notice did mention some things. According to Brian Armstrong, who is the CEO over at Coinbase, he says, today, Coinbase received a Wells notice from the SEC focused on staking. So again, we pretty much predicted that one when they went after Kraken. And he says, asset listings. So it sounds like they're going to tell Coinbase, these assets we, the SEC, have determined are securities, and therefore you shan't list them without going through all the stupid, you know, hoops that you would have to jump through in order to sell securities to people, which basically means you can't sell them to anyone with the exception of what they call, what is it? There's accredited investors. That's what.
Now, that would be an interesting thing because...
And that's basically millionaires.
Right. Yeah. Basically, if in order to get into a startup in America, you have to be able, because that's where the potential earnings are the biggest. Mm-hmm. So you have to be able to prove that you're already a millionaire before they'll let you invest in that kind of thing, because, you know, the socialists know what's best for you.
Well, and we wouldn't want the little guy to actually get a leg up by buying an investment at its lowest potential price, you know, when it's first offered. Only the ultra wealthy should have access to those opportunities.
Yeah, because, you know, it could do all kinds of damage to you if you made a bunch of money. You know, it could be, there's all kinds of things that might do to you. Look at what happens to people who win the lottery. Well, so they have to protect you from not being poor.
Well, this is one of the things that when it comes to people getting into cryptocurrency, this is why they want to stop crypto, because crypto doesn't have the rails that prevent you from, you know, making mistakes or whatever that supposedly these government regulated systems do, which is total BS, because you could totally buy stocks.
I was going to say, like, they really don't have rails at all in the first place. I mean, look at the Crypto 6 case. They had 7 or 8 people testify, you know, so-called victims testify against you, and every single one of them said that the banks, you know, the banks never called them.
See,
you know, they didn't do KYC.
I can't agree with
but
that
you did.
Because they railroad a lot of people, and you can't railroad people without rails.
That's a great way to put it. Let's go to the phones here. Caller, you're on Free Talk Live. What is your name? Hello? Caller, you're on the air. Going once, going twice. All right, we'll put them back on hold. Check back with them a little bit later. But this is what they want you to believe. The SEC wants you to believe that their regulations somehow keep people safe, even though next week you can just dump your entire life savings into stocks and then proceed to lose it all because, it's regulated and safe.
Yeah, and you don't know that Bear Stearns pissed somebody off.
That was,
of course, the bank that they decided not to bail out during the housing collapse in 2008.
The regulators, they get basically the ability to select people to, or companies to basically go after, to persecute. But in practice, none of the regulations actually help anybody. They don't protect anybody.
No, they don't.
And it's just
except they protect the established players from competition. And protect the companies that own politicians from the companies that don't.
Not the people that they're, you know,
supposedly, you know, marketed, so to speak, at protecting, though, right? And that's what
they certainly don't live up to their marketing hype.
That's what I want to go. One reason why they want to go after crypto, because it is a threat not only to the banks but also to all the entire financial system. I mean, in order to get into stocks and get out of stocks, you've got to completely know your customer. You've got to show your social security number and everything's on the record. Whereas cryptocurrency, you can just go and buy from another person if whoever wants to sell it to you. No one else has to know about that. It's completely outside of the system. They want it to be as inside the system as possible because they probably don't think they can get away with just outright banning it, but they do believe that they can just regulate the what they call the on-ramps and the off-ramps, and that's what we're seeing them do with targeting Coinbase here. It's one of the largest ramps on and off to and from cryptocurrency.
Now, the interesting thing, if they do claim that these coins are securities, is there is one thing that the judge came up with that was positive during the library case, which is what he said was that when library sold library, it was a security. But when it was sold on the aftermarket, it wasn't.
He did say that.
Yeah,
that's true.
So it seems to me like Coinbase would be an aftermarket seller. So at least with respect to library, they would not be, it would not be considered a security unless they were marketing it as one. And I mean, my experience with exchanges is limited because they all refuse to do business with me. But when I was able to get exchange accounts before, when I was still a person, they didn't market the coins. They just listed
them. They have
them.
Yeah. They're just there. You can trade them if you want or not. Yeah, you make a good point on that. And I think that the SEC is probably going to come at it from this perspective. And there was an announcement they made recently that said that exchanges in the United States have to be, I believe the term was qualified custodian. And so, and Coinbase, by the way, was one of the I think the main company that was pushing for this requirement from the SEC. And I believe Coinbase believes that it is a qualified custodian. The SEC ended up putting out a notice later that said, hey, look, just because you want to be a qualified custodian doesn't mean you will meet the requirements to be a qualified custodian. So they've recently been acting like, hey, just come on in, sit down.
You know,
we'll tell you what to do. And then
come into my parlor, said the spider to the fly.
Right.
you know what's interesting is the choice of words, qualified custodian, which suggests if they have custody, but if it's decentralized and they don't have custody.
Well, anything on Coinbase, they have custody of.
Sure, but what if they changed their system? So you
to a decentralized exchange?
It's decentralized, and they're not holding it.
It'll never happen. There's no money to be made for them on that.
I don't know.
Decentralized exchanges can make money by charging fees.
You could charge fees and have the
maybe not
exchanges
the same
themselves.
Kind of money that Coinbase makes.
Yeah.
But the thing is, if they're holding a coin and that coin goes up, the value of their assets goes up, but the value of their liabilities also goes up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that big. It's not like their dollar liabilities stay the same while their dollar assets skyrocket.
I don't think you're going to see Coinbase evolve into a decentralized exchange. I just don't. That's not their business model.
I'm not saying
I don't
that's going to happen either, but. It's something that they could potentially, I have a feeling they could potentially do, you know, and basically be the on-ramp without actually, while sort of skirting some of the regulations, if that's the regulations that the government's going to, you know, put forth.
But if they are taken down, you might see them replaced by decentralized.
Oh, I hope so. Yeah, absolutely. People need to look into those. ThorChain is probably the world's most prominent that I've heard of. I heard BISC is still in operation. I don't know how busy it is. BISQ and then ThorChain. There's another one that's about to launch called Maya, which is a ThorChain fork. So those are the ones to really, I would say, keep your eyes on. If there's another one I don't know about, I know Atomic Dex was out there for a while, but it's essentially banned in the United States. So
really?
You can't download it at least easily from the United States. Well, this was as of 2 years ago, the last time I I tried to see, do it.
So what, the software?
In the last 6 months, I'm pretty sure I've downloaded the source code to that and built
to Atomic
it
Dex?
From Coinbase, if I'm not wrong. I'm sorry, not Coinbase, but GitHub.
That you could probably do if you're building it yourself, but as of the last time I looked, which again was a couple of years ago, they were blocking people from the United States from downloading the binary, the actual executable files of that.
I mean, that just seems so weird if it's decentralized, because I mean,
it's
software aspect is, yeah, that might be the
issue.
And
that's one of the takeaways, by the way, from this SEC attack that I'm going to... This is a multi-pronged attack. We're only talking about Coinbase right now, but another one they went after just this week was something called SushiSwap, which is a supposedly decentralized finance, decentralized exchange for, I believe it's Ethereum tokens in the case of SushiSwap. I could be wrong about that. But it's one of the biggies. You know, there's like Uniswap and then there's SushiSwap. So they're going after them because they're not fully decentralized and there's some centralized aspect of it that they were able to target. So they're going at big. They're going after a lot of these guys. But let's get back into the Coinbase story here. So what's going on? According to CNBC, the SEC has ramped up its enforcement on the crypto industry, bearing down on companies and projects that the regulator alleges were hawking unregistered securities. Reports first surfaced of an SEC probe in Coinbase in mid-2022. So Gary Gensler is the chairman of the SEC at this moment, and he's the one who's leading this charge against cryptocurrency. He has said publicly that he believes that every cryptocurrency except for Bitcoin is a security.
One that's controlled by the Federal Reserve. That's very interesting.
What's the logic behind that? I mean, we have things like Bitcoin Cash, which are literal forks of Bitcoin.
I know.
With some only slight changes.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
I mean, that makes no sense.
I'm not here to defend what he's saying, but that's what he's saying. That's what he has said.
Wow.
So that, to me, is where they're going to...
That's the most ridiculous statement.
Yeah, I think if they're going to come after Coinbase and say to Coinbase that you guys are dealing in unregistered securities and you need to stop... And if they are successful in this lawsuit against Coinbase, then Coinbase will have to either get rid of every coin on their platform except for Bitcoin, or only offer everything besides Bitcoin to accredited investors on their platform.
And as I recall, they only have half a dozen coins.
No, they've got a lot.
The last time I used my Coinbase account.
Yeah, I haven't used one in years, but I've seen them talking about adding all kinds of oddball stuff. So from what I understand, they have quite a bit. But if you want to weigh in here, you're welcome to join us. The number is 603-283-6160. It's Free Talk Live. On Free Talk Live, we're bringing people to the ideas of liberty every day. From wrestling superstars like Glenn Jacobs.
You guys really are having an impact, I believe. Like I said, a lot of where I am now is due to listening to Free Talk Live. You changed my mind on some very important issues years ago.
To random people tuning in on the radio.
I was kind of stuck in the left-right paradigm. I heard your show by chance on a Saturday night. From there, I went on, joined the Free State Project, and become an amplifier. So, I mean, that's really the reason why I amp is because I know that if it wasn't for you guys being on as many stations as you are, I never would have found the ideas of liberty.
You can help more people hear the message of liberty by joining Free Talk Live's AMPS program on Patreon for as little as $5 a month. And you'll get access to special perks. Visit amps.freetalklive.com, amps.freetalklive.com. Is Free Talk Live. Phones are open and you can join us here. The number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. We're talking about the latest attack by the Securities and Exchange Commission, going as about as big as it can go at this point, attacking Coinbase and some others as well. They seem to have no end to the amount of lawyers and taxpayer resources they have at their disposal to try to wreak absolute havoc on the cryptocurrency industry here in the United States, and I guess try to drive everybody out of the U.S., try to drive out all the innovators, all of the entrepreneurs, and keep them away and keep the jobs away from the U.S. because that's going to be the result of this. I mean, if they are successful at what they're trying to do, the absolute result is going to be the decimation of the crypto industry in the U.S. It's just going to go somewhere else. It'll go to more friendly jurisdictions, whether it be El Salvador or St. Kitts or wherever. It's going to go where it's welcome. But let's go to your phone calls and thoughts. It's Ian, Chris, and nobody here in the studio tonight. We've got Sheriff David Hathaway from Arizona down there on the border. Welcome, sir. You're back on Free Talk Live. What's on your mind?
Yeah, good evening, guys. I wanted to talk about an especially disgusting police shooting that happened in Tucson. It was recent. The charges were recently dismissed against the officer. If you go to YouTube, you can search for shooting wheelchair Tucson, and you'll see it. The officer was named Ryan Remington. He shot a man in a wheelchair 9 times in the back as the man in the wheelchair was driving about 1 or 2 miles an hour through a parking lot. And it was so heinous that the officer actually got indicted. The name of the man that was killed was Richard Richards. The officer was Ryan Remington. Mm-hmm. And initially, a judge dismissed the indictment, saying that it needed to be re-indicted. This was about 6 months ago, saying, well, you needed to mention to the grand jury whether the man would have possibly been capable of getting out of the wheelchair, so I'm going to dismiss it, and you have to re-indict it. So recently, I think it was about a month or two ago, the prosecutor decided to not re-indict it. So it's been dismissed with no possibility of refiling. So, but if you look that up on YouTube, the best channel to watch it on is one called Police Activity, because it doesn't have any of the evening news type openings and closers. It's just the body cam video,
the raw footage. I remember this one, actually. Yeah. David, we talked about this at the time that it was going down. You basically have a man in a motorized wheelchair who is, I think he was like leaving some sort of department store, and he had a knife in his hands, allegedly, right? Wasn't that what was going on, if I recall correctly?
Yeah, like a store employee said when he left Walmart, said, do you have a receipt for that toolbox? He had a toolbox in his lap. And then he said, I have your receipt right here. And he was holding a knife in his hand. And he just kept going he didn't brandish the knife or point it at anybody. He just kept going into the parking lot. And then a Tucson police officer that was hired as private security, he wasn't working for the police department right then, but he was in uniform and everything, in his official uniform, approached the guy. Real slow motion pursuit through the parking lot, shot him 9 times in the back. And then you can see all that in the footage. And, yeah, you know,
crazy.
It was crazy. I mean, it's surprising that they ever indicted the guy, but it was just so heinous and obvious from the body cam footage that
try to claim, as so many of them do, that he feared for his life from a man in a wheelchair, a motorized wheelchair, who was trying to get away from him? Was that his excuse for why he had to shoot this man to death?
I think the more claim was that he could be a potential danger to the public.
Who?
But you know, this this also shows the moral hazard of being private companies being able to hire a police officer who has qualified immunity. That guy can just do whatever he wants, and the liability won't fall back on the store. If it was regular private security hired by the store would very likely be liable for the actions of that private security. But it's dismissed because they hire an actual Tucson police officer.
So he still has his job, I presume?
Yeah, he has his job. Mm-hmm. Ryan Remington, no negative consequences. I'm not aware of any civil lawsuits. I would encourage the listeners to actually go watch that video to actually be able to see there was nothing threatening going on.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Now, was this the guy who had been, if I recall correctly, there was one guy, he was in a wheelchair because Texas police had shot him, and then he moved out of Texas, and the police, wherever he moved, finished the job. Is that this case?
I'm not sure. I don't know the man's history before the incident in Tucson, but yeah. But anyway, that's all I had for you guys. I just thought that was especially disgusting. And the first time as a female judge, I don't know if she thought the officer was cute or whatnot, but she just, I'm going to dismiss this. You got to, like, re-indict the guy. And during the indictment, you have to mention whether the person was able of getting out of the wheelchair to pose a threat. And, you know, I think it's, you know, the jury is supposed to be the trier of fact in the case. And to say there's not even enough for a jury to look at, there's not even not even the possibility. If a judge throws a case out, you know, before it goes to a jury, it means that prima facie, there's nothing, there's no question that a jury could even consider. It's a waste of time for the jury and for the court and the court reporter and all that, because there's prima facie, there's no case whatsoever. So, I mean, to make that kind of, when you look at that footage and say, no, there's no possibility for any issues for a jury to consider, it's obviously the judge was protecting the cop.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Wow. This footage is, you know, it's crystal clear. You get both, you get a body cam image of the other cop that shows up on the scene, and then you get store security surveillance footage showing clearly this wheelchaired man is trying to come back into the garden center here as Ryan, the cop, shoots him in the back multiple times. The man slumps over, falls out of his wheelchair, and then proceeds to be cuffed by the officer who shot him to death.
Yeah, no possibility of saying that there's a threat that you can articulate. And if it wasn't for the footage, a person may have some doubts. The cop would say, oh, I felt threatened, or he was belligerent, or he squared off at me. But, you know, with the footage there, I don't see how the judge had any basis for throwing that out of court. But anyway, that's
you're
all I have.
You're a sheriff there in the southern part of Arizona, David. You may not know what every department does, but is it pretty standard that the police, these are city cops in Tucson, is it pretty standard that police are issued non-lethal methods to take down a suspect, such as a taser, do you think? Or they only have guns?
No, in Arizona, every department with has tasers, and they're trained on what's called less than lethal usage of force, and they're trained by attorneys on a continuum of force. You know, starting with verbal commands, and then less than lethal options like taser, and the final option would be use of lethal force. Which obviously the officer went straight to the lethal force. So, you know, he violated procedure.
Obviously.
And he violated basic human rights, but the judge said, no, there's not even enough for a jury to consider.
Amazing. So. Thank you for that update, David. I really appreciate you calling in here tonight. And thank you, by the way, for sending the letter to the judge here in the Crypto 6 case. So I really appreciate that as well.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, sir. It's great to hear the update on that. I mean, it's not great news, but I'm glad we got an update, because we did talk about this footage when it went down. This was like a year ago, and it's absolutely outrageous. The idea that this cop could not possibly strip a knife, if this guy had a knife in his hands, which is the, you know, allegedly what was going on, this pair, like, essentially, you know, I don't know if he's a paraplegic or what he is, but he's barely moving in this wheelchair. He's got one of those, you know, he's so crippled he can't even wheel the wheelchair, right? Like, he's got one of those automated motorized wheelchairs, just kind of slumped over and like moving this thing into the Walmart. I mean, the idea that you couldn't just walk faster than this guy, turn around and then tase him to stop him, or like
would
hit the knife out of his hand.
You even need to do that? I mean, throw something in front of his wheelchair and it probably won't move.
You could probably do that too.
You know,
but I mean, if you needed to, for some reason, do something to this guy, you could tase him. But that, he didn't even try that. He just pulls his gun out and blasts him 9 times in the back. I mean, it's just absolutely insane. The footage, by the way, is, as he pointed out, on the Police Activity channel on YouTube. It was posted about a year ago. It's entitled Body Cam Footage of Arizona Officer Shooting Wheelchair Shoplifting Suspect. I will put a link to it on our social media at social.freetalklive.com. Make sure you're following the @FTL account there. You can see this for yourself. I mean, this is completely indefensible how anyone could look at this and say, oh, yeah, that guy was a real danger to the people around him. I mean,
and they don't understand why we need AR-15s.
Yeah.
I mean, this is why we need AR-15s, because the police are cold-blooded killers. It is good to know that there's one good cop in America, apparently.
This is a situation where, you know, he may have been shoplifting, but there's
allegedly,
right? There's way, even if he was shoplifting, there's way less dramatic, you know, actions you can take. And
sure,
far short of killing somebody. Murdering somebody does, or killing somebody does not just, is not justified by, you know, whatever. What was a knife he stole?
He allegedly had a knife and had stolen like a tackle box or something.
A tackle box, yeah.
But
I mean,
there's no way of knowing from what we know whether that was actually stolen or whether he was just annoyed by the demand that he show a receipt and said, screw you.
Yeah. Which is, you're not obligated to show a receipt, as I understand it.
I've definitely been tempted to do that. Mm-hmm. I haven't done it yet, but...
I don't know if I've ever been asked to show a receipt.
They do it a lot at Best Buy, which I have not been to in many years, but it's very common at that particular store.
Okay.
Walmart, a little less often, at least around here, you're not likely to see it happen. But
I've never seen it happen at Walmart. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if it happens to certain people, but I've never seen it.
Yeah, Walmart does it pretty regularly. And
I have had it happen
irritating.
Here. Yeah,
Keene.
I've had it happen here.
Interesting.
Yeah. Please watch this footage, and if you actually can somehow defend the police, I would love to hear from you, but I can't imagine that anybody possibly could, except for apparently this judge that dismissed the charges against this guy. All right, the number here if you want to join the show, it's 603-283-6160. So speaking of charges, we were talking about Coinbase now being targeted with the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission. We're probably not talking about criminal charges in this particular case, but potentially ruinous financial penalties. At least we know that in the case of our friends over at Library, who recently lost a case to the SEC, they have been ruined. It is not potentially ruinous for them. Their company has been absolutely destroyed. Their employees are gone. They have no way of paying employees at this point. In fact, they're not even done doing the damage yet, because the so-called settlement phase of the case is still in progress with Library. They're still trying to figure out just how much blood they are going to try to extract from the stone at this point in this particular case. And they've demanded that Library obey a final set of discovery requirements in the case. So even though they've already lost, Library, which is basically Jeremy Kaufman, the founder, because he's the only one essentially left, he has to jump through whatever these discovery hoops are that this judge has put in front of him in order for the final steps to be completed in the case. So that's where we're at there. It has destroyed Library. Will this destroy Coinbase? Remains to be seen. Coinbase says they think they can push back on this. Their founder, Brian Armstrong, and for listeners that don't know, Coinbase is like probably the top cryptocurrency exchange inside the United States. He points out that they received a Wells notice from the SEC. This was 2 days ago. He says, 2 years ago, the SEC reviewed our business in detail and approved Coinbase to go public. He says, our S-1, some government form, clearly explained our asset listing process and includes 57 references to staking. Coinbase runs a rigorous asset review process and has rejected more than 90% of assets that have applied to be listed on the platform.
How are they going to defend that? Like, if they've approved it to go public, and it was there when they approved it to go public, you think that would have been the time to, you know,
to object?
Object, well, right? Like, yeah. It seems like that is that is suggestive to the fact that they are operating, you know, within their SEC's, you know, rules of operations.
A lot of people don't understand how the rules work. And the way the rules work are, if you screw up, you've got to pay. If the regulators screw up, you've got to pay. If the prosecutors screw up, you've got to pay. If the judge screws up, you've got to pay. No matter who screws up, the peasant has to pay.
Well, that's about right. In this case, these certainly aren't peasants. Coinbase is one of the elites out there, but you know, it's hard to feel bad for Coinbase in this particular case, but I do still take their side of it. I hope that they can have some success here. I wish them the best in this, but it's hard to feel bad for them because they've been trying to cozy up to the rulers for a very, very long time. So it's like the bad versus the bad in this case. It's hard to hold my nose and take Coinbase's side in this, but that's basically what I'm doing at this point.
Definitely true. They've to some extent, it's it's tempting to think, you know, if you live by the regulation, you die by the regulation.
And they may. They may yet.
No.
And it's, I'm not going to cheer. I will say this. I will not cheer their demise, but it's going to be hard to really be too excited to back them in this case. Certainly, I'm not going to donate to their legal funds or anything like that.
Yeah.
Because they're still calling for, there was some sort of post that they made. I don't know if it was today. I don't have it in front of me, but they're basically still angling. They said something like, crypto needs rules, not enforcement or something. There was like something they didn't like, but they still like the idea of there being this structure, this government regulation system. And so they're not like, they're not going libertarian after this or anything like that.
Yeah. And of course, rules are essential, but rules are for crypto in the code.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody can read the rules, and anybody can understand the rules, and any computer can interpret the rules and enforce the rules.
And if you don't like the rules, you
don't buy it.
Don't pay.
Yeah. Number three, he says, while we understand this is all part of the journey to reforming our financial system, we are right on the law, confident in the facts, and welcome the opportunity for Coinbase and by extension the broader crypto community to get before a court. But the thing is, Armstrong, you're not going to be the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Library already lost. And already the courts decided, or the court in the case of the New Hampshire Federal District Court, decided that Library's token is a security because Library had some of it and they gave it away.
You know,
that qualified it apparently as a
security.
Wow.
Yeah, there are different legal arguments, though, to that, as I understand it. So it doesn't necessarily mean
you mean compared to what they're going to come after Coinbase with?
Yeah, like Ripple has a different legal theory than a defense under, I don't know, different constitution.
Well, they better have a different one because the same defense is probably going to fail.
Right, yeah. And so I'm not sure it's necessarily
not
the case
necessarily
that
because district court precedents are
too.
Not
different circuit.
Binding outside of their district. Mm-hmm. In order to get a really binding precedent, you have to fight to the Supreme Court.
Right.
And maybe Coinbase has sufficiently deep pockets to do that.
I suspect they do.
Although I suspect
it's not hitting the Supreme
that
Court.
They may well not. It's hard to say.
The reason it's almost not, certainly not going to hit the Supreme Court is multifaceted here. So you have generally, the Supreme Court takes almost very, very, very small number of cases that are appealed to it, first of all. So it's less than like a fraction of a percent. But one of the things that's usually a requirement for somebody to appeal to the Supreme Court is that there's conflicting circuit rulings.
Appeals.
On the same question or mm-hmm. issue raised. So it's not likely, the case of like, you know, the Crypto 6 case, it's almost impossible
to go
to
higher
see,
than
you
appeals.
Know, right. Yep. To higher than the what circuit, I guess.
The Court of Appeals.
Yeah, Court of Appeals for the circuit. First circuit. Yeah. And as well as pretty much any crypto case at this mm-hmm. point, because there's just not enough
there's not
circuits
enough cases.
That have ruled.
Yeah. He says, we're proud to stand up for our customers in the industry in these moments. Going forward, the legal process will provide an open and public forum before an unbiased body where we'll be able to make clear for all to see that the SEC simply has not been fair, reasonable, or even demonstrated a seriousness of purpose when it comes to its engagement on digital assets. And look, if you think courts are unbiased, I mean, I'm sorry, who cuts the judge's paycheck? You know?
Yeah, they're usually former prosecutors.
Yeah.
He goes on. He says, in the meantime, Coinbase will continue to do what we do best, build the most trusted products and services, blah, blah, blah. We're excited to work with all governments and regulators around the world who are focused on putting in place clear rules to regulate the industry, he says. So they just love working with governments. They want to be on the side of the government. But it didn't, as you pointed out, it didn't help them.
Yeah.
All the currying of favor that they tried to do in the last decade that they've been around, I think they've been around a little longer than a decade, has resulted in them being targeted by the SEC. It did not save them. It did not prevent this from happening. If you want to comment, you can join us. The number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. They say in their blog post here that The Wells notice is the way the SEC tells a company they're recommending the SEC take enforcement action. It is not a formal charge or a lawsuit, but it can lead to one. They say that the Wells notice doesn't provide a lot of information for them to respond to. The SEC has told us they've identified potential violations of securities law, but little more. We asked the SEC specifically to identify which assets they believe may be securities, and they declined to do so. Today's Wells notice comes after Coinbase provided multiple proposals to the SEC about registration over the course of months, all of which the SEC ultimately refused to respond to. And this once again comes back to what the SEC says on one hand is, hey, come on in, just talk to us, we'll help you, we'll get you through the, you can register with us.
Yeah, you know, one of the things they like to say is something to the effect of, you know, we've provided lots of clarity, and yet they have provided no clarity at all. And in fact, in numerous instances, they've given you the rule, and then they've given you a conflicting example that doesn't match what the rule says. And it's like, how is anybody supposed to follow the rules if, you know, the examples that you're giving don't even match up with what you're saying the rules are?
Well, Ayn Rand actually answered that, and Atlas shrugged. She said, we don't write these rules to be obeyed. We write them to be broken. No government has the power to govern free men. They only have the power to crack down on criminals. So if your society doesn't produce enough criminals, you make more.
Yep.
You pass law after law until no one can turn around without breaking them, and then you cash in on the fear.
He says, we don't take this development lightly. We are confident in the way we run our business, the same business we presented to the SEC in order for us to become a public company in 2021. We continue to think rulemaking and legislation are better tools for defining the law for our industry than enforcement actions. But if necessary, we welcome the opportunity to get clarity in court. Below, we share more details on our attempts to engage the SEC on registration paths, the current U.S. crypto regulatory confusion, and another reminder that Coinbase doesn't list securities. They say the SEC will not let crypto companies, quote-unquote, come in and register. We tried. They say the Wells notice comes out of the investigation we disclosed last summer. Shortly after it began, the SEC asked us if we'd be interested in discussing a potential resolution that would include registering some portion of our business with the SEC. We said absolutely yes. Specifically, the SEC asked us to provide our views on what a registration path for Coinbase could look like. You know what that means? They don't have one.
Right.
They're asking Coinbase to develop this for them. They say here, because there's no existing way for a crypto exchange to register. So we developed and proposed two different registration models. We spent millions of dollars on legal support to build these proposals and repeatedly asked for the SEC's feedback. We got none.
You know what's interesting about this? They're so pro-regulation, and one of the reasons they're probably pro-regulation is once you've developed an industry, which an exchange business, right?
Yeah.
You don't want competition.
Right.
And the way you keep competition out is by advocating for rules and regulations.
You put the regulations up to stop the...
It's not about protecting anyone.
They're protecting themselves in this case.
Well, yeah, okay, fair enough.
And that's what they were doing. They were proposing what the regulation should be. They thought the SEC was trying to give them that opportunity to be on the inside track with all the regulators. There's more coming up here. You can share your thoughts as well. The number is 603-283-6160. Free Talk Live.
Free Talk Live.
It is Free Talk Live, and you can bring up what you want. We're kicking off the second hour here. Got plenty of time for you if you want to join the show. The number is 603-283-6160. We're talking about the latest attack on the cryptocurrency industry here in the United States by the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission. They have gone after a myriad of targets in recent months and years, but mostly recent months. They've really been ramping things up since they had their victory against Library, and they are now in the ending stages of the XRP, the Ripple case. There has not been a ruling yet on that, but apparently all the arguments have been made at this point, so that one's in the judge's hands. They threatened Kraken. They got $30 million out of them, which is one of the more popular crypto exchanges, over their staking program. They went after Binance USD through attacking Paxos, which was its issuer. They basically killed the third largest stablecoin on the planet, Binance USD. It still exists, but it's shrinking now instead of growing because they're not allowed to issue any more of it. And the people who had some of it are turning it in for the dollars that are supposedly backing them up. So the market cap of Binance USD has shrunk by like 50%, I think, since the SEC targeted them. They went after the Gemini dollar as well, as I understand it. There's just been so many stories. It's actually been hard to keep up. I've got a few of them here to talk about just tonight. We're talking about the big one to start, which is the attack on Coinbase. It doesn't get much larger. When you talk about cryptocurrency and people ask the question of how do I get my first crypto, a lot of people just sort of by default say Coinbase because it's kind of like the easy way to do it is, you know, you hook up your bank account, you jump through all the know your customer hoops, and then you can just order the purchase of Bitcoin. And if you do, please withdraw it to your own wallet. Do not leave it on Coinbase. Yeah. Do not leave it in the hands of someone else. And so that's kind of what Coinbase is useful for people. It's their first, my first Bitcoin, you know, your first access to this particular world. They're the big bank of Bitcoin, basically. And that's and what we're sharing with you here is how Coinbase, according to their own blog post, attempted to cozy up to these regulators for years. They even went in and had conversations with the SEC, spent millions of dollars trying to develop a regulatory structure for companies to follow, because they had asked, according to their post, they'd asked the SEC, or the SEC asked them, sorry, to be clear, the SEC told them, could you provide us your views on a registration path for Coinbase? The reason is because the SEC didn't have one. They didn't have any kind of structure, you know, in place.
It's funny how, you know, we always tell people don't talk to police, right?
Yes.
And yet these businesses have not learned. They've not learned that lesson.
Don't talk to regulators in this case, right?
Yeah, they're another form of police. They're another policing organization.
They absolutely are. And they can bring criminal charges.
Yeah.
In this case, they have not done that. It's probably going to be a civil case. But they could. So they developed two different registration models and spent millions of dollars on lawyers to build these proposals. And as you guys pointed out in the last segment, the reason they are doing this is not because they want to help the industry, but because they want to help themselves by being the first to create this structure that then everybody else will have to spend millions of dollars trying to jump through the hoops.
They want to keep the competition out. They want to keep the small players out. They want to establish that industry. Whoever's in there, fine. You know, it's big, but anybody else who wants to get into that, you know, industry, nope, can't do it because the barriers to entry are too high.
But it's interesting here, looking at their own explanation of what happened, and that is they asked for the SEC's feedback, and they received none. We also reiterated that we stand by our listing process, that we don't list securities today, and repeatedly invited the SEC to raise any questions about any asset at all on our platform. They raised none. They say here, we met with the SEC more than 30 times over 9 months, but we were doing all the talking. In December of 2022, we asked the SEC again for some feedback on our proposals. The SEC staff agreed to provide feedback in January of this year. And then in January, the day before our scheduled meeting, the SEC canceled on us and told us they would be shifting back to an enforcement investigation. We now understand that there's a disagreement within the commission on how to proceed with the registration path, and this was just 2 months ago. The investigation is still at a very early stage. We've produced documents and provided two witnesses for testimony, one on the basic aspects of our staking services and one on the basic operation of our trading platform. At no point in this investigation has the SEC told us a single, specific concern about a single asset on our platform. To move to a Wells notice now is unusual, to say the least. Well, it was unusual when they charged me in the Crypto 6 case with 4 counts of tax evasion without ever having sent a single letter from the IRS. That's unusual by definition.
That's pretty crazy. You definitely will normally get notified.
Right. Normally they want to tell
the IRS.
Right.
Yeah.
They normally want to tell you and give you a chance to cut a check.
Yeah.
Right. No, in this case, it just went straight to criminal charges.
They want to settle up with you. They want to. Yeah. They want to have some sort of settlement. They don't want to have to go to court. They don't have to, you know, do all that. That costs them effort and time, and then they actually have to put a case together.
Well, and unless you're a political target.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
And that's
the difference between. The
average person.
The average person then with the IRS.
What were they doing during the Trump administration?
Investigating us.
Okay. But were they bringing charges against anybody?
Oh, yeah.
Or is this a Biden thing?
No, they were bringing charges against people.
Okay.
Yeah.
Republicans and Democrats aren't that different from
local Bitcoiners have been going down for years, and it's always the same pattern. They always have the undercover guy who makes some buys, and then they say they're a heroin dealer, and then the person probably sells to them, and then they get them for money laundering on a plea deal.
This is something you can actually go back into old archives of Free Talk Live, and we've talked about this on air.
Yeah,
about
some of the cases.
How many stories have we done where the government has sent in an undercover Fed to ask about... to purchase crypto specifically from another individual who sold it, and they would do this usually two or three times, and then the third time they would say, "This is it. This is the standard tactic for crypto investigations." They would say, "I'm involved in
heroin.
It's usually
heroin,
drug dealing." They'll say, "Yeah, heroin, or sex trafficking, or the combination."
Because heroin
looks
the worst in front of a jury.
Right. And then, of course, you know, while you're in the middle of a transaction, you have their money. That's when they're saying it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's right when you can't back out. And, of course, you're now afraid because you're dealing with some sort of violent thug that you didn't know until they just told you. And if you don't finish the transaction, who knows what that person might do to you?
Yeah, that's true. Well, I made all those points to the jury, and it didn't matter one iota, apparently. And in fact, even pointed out to them that I knew how these cases operated and that I knew that I was under investigation. And then when that guy dropped that he was a heroin dealer in a conversation with us at the nightcap that we had, it was like, oh, red alert.
Yeah.
Here's a federal agent.
There wasn't a single person who interacted with that guy who didn't think he was a federal agent.
So, and the thing is, in order to get a conviction, supposedly, for what they call money laundering in this particular case, where an undercover officer pretends to be doing something illegal, you have to believe him. That's actually one of elements. It's one of the elements of the charge. Not only do you have to go through with the transaction, which I didn't do.
Yeah.
He went and bought from a vending machine, and they called that me doing the transaction, which is ridiculous on its face.
You explicitly told him you would not help him with any financial transactions.
And I specifically said because of money laundering and cited the actual wording of the law.
This is the crazy thing. You actually cited the law in your response to him.
I did.
And it's like, and then he was like, oh, that's a wink and a nod that like.
Yeah, it's insane.
Absolutely crazy. So wait a minute. Let me get this straight. So he did not tell you that you could go and buy crypto from the vending machine.
No, I did not tell him.
And the guy was just like, sort of like he had nothing to respond with, because that's what happened.
Still found me guilty anyway.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy.
On that case. Even though I knew he was likely a law enforcement officer, and I did not believe that the money was from selling drugs, because that's how they do it every single time. And I knew of several other cases where they did the exact same thing. Anyway, so back to the story about Coinbase here. Especially, they say, because our staking and exchange services are largely unchanged since 2021, when the SEC reviewed our forms and allowed us to become a public company. They say our core business model remains the same. And then they go on to say that the U.S. crypto regulatory environment needs more guidance, not more enforcement. And I hate the term guidance, because like guidance kind of suggests like, oh, this is a suggestion. We're just guiding you towards doing things better. And no, guidance is a threat when it comes to the government.
No, but it's not more guidance. And for multiple reasons, I think it's not more guidance. The guidance they've given in the past has only created more questions.
Yep.
What needs to happen is the SEC needs to be dissolved. It needs to be done away with.
That'd be great.
But
then all the investors could possibly lose money.
After the first time they lost money, hopefully they learn their lesson and not lose money the next time.
So they claim here that instead of developing a regulatory framework, the SEC is continuing to regulate by enforcement only. We recently explained in an amicus brief the lack of guidance for crypto companies to follow. And this, by the way, is what Library has determined as well. They told the SEC, just tell us what to do and we'll do it. We don't want to spend time fighting this in court. We don't want to spend money fighting this in court. We don't like you guys, but we understand you're going to hurt us. So just tell us what to do. You've got the gun to our head. We'll do it. And they wouldn't tell them.
But the answer is, be old money. Don't be new money.
Yeah.
Don't be somebody who was middle class and is now getting ahead.
Yeah.
Be somebody who's always been rich. And then we'll let you do whatever you want.
Right. That's the point. There's nothing that Library could do.
Yeah.
In fact, Library spoke out on this Coinbase thing recently on their Twitter account, which is at LBRYCOM. They say, we stand with Coinbase 100%. What the SEC is doing to them isn't just misinformed, they're intentionally evil people. But unfortunately, if the standards of the SEC versus Library case hold, Coinbase was almost certainly breaking the law. We don't want this to be true, but it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so Coinbase is going to probably have to find out the hard way. As Jeremy Kaufman points out in a follow-up, he says, I hope Brian Armstrong, that's a Coinbase CEO, is finally learning there is no path to success through compliance. He needs to be playing offense, not defense.
Mm-hmm.
But it's probably a little too late for that. So Coinbase says, nevertheless, we've continued to try and engage with the SEC. In addition to our attempts to develop a registration path, we have repeatedly, formally asked the SEC to engage in rulemaking for our industry. We filed a petition for rulemaking last summer. On Monday, we submitted another substantive comment letter in support of the petition, detailing the need for clarity around the SEC's views of staking services and the lack of notice to the industry about any SEC concerns. Well, the SEC, as far as they're concerned, put you on notice when they threatened Kraken and got a $30 million out of them. That was their idea of letting the industry know what they thought about staking.
Notice by extortion.
And by the way, my prediction, and I hope I'm wrong, but I don't see any reason why I would be wrong about this at this point. If they can go after staking, they can go after mining, right? Like if staking is illegal and a security, then why can't they say mining is an illegal security? Because for listeners that don't know, staking is essentially the alternative to mining generally. There's two major ways of quote-unquote securing a cryptocurrency network. There's proof of work, which is what is mining. And then there's proof of stake, which is requires you to have some cryptocurrency and then you quote unquote stake it. And then you are helping to process the transactions on the network through that system.
You know what else is interesting?
They both earn. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the staking earns, you get more coins by staking. And when you mine, when you find blocks, you get coins through that system. So anyway, go ahead with your point.
Yeah, Ethereum, they changed their model.
They did. They went from proof of work to proof of stake,
which turned it into a security.
That would be what the SEC and would allege.
The reason why,
although it sounds like the SEC would say they were a security either way,
maybe. But the reason, the reason why they did it supposedly is because of the attack on the model they had before, using electricity. Even though,
you mean from the environmentalists?
Yeah. And I don't know if I would say they're environmentalists, but certainly that was the argument. The argument didn't make any sense. The numbers
from
didn't
the watermelons.
Yeah. So
green on the outside, and red on the inside.
Yeah. But it's just curious how they pushed it into this direction where now we're going to regulate it as a security. And it's one of the top
Ethereum is number two.
So top. What would you call it? Cryptocurrency? I don't know if you call it cryptocurrency.
It's crypto. It's a platform. It's a crypto.
Yeah,
it's all of those things.
Yeah, it's kind of a multiple different things there. But
so they say they want clarity around the SEC's views of staking services. Just 2 days later, we received this Wells notice that includes our staking services, the same staking services we referenced 57 times in our filing with the SEC in 2021 when they approved us to become a public company. Importantly, Coinbase is not the only one raising these concerns. Even courts are questioning the SEC's inconsistent positions and lack of guidance to the industry. Federal bankruptcy judge Michael Wiles, in a recent Voyager case, shared his findings in a ruling against the SEC that makes clear that the SEC is on shaky ground when it comes to the commission's rulings, the commission's recent views of cryptocurrencies being security. Weil stated in his ruling, quote, regulators themselves cannot seem to agree as to whether cryptocurrencies are commodities that may be subject to regulation by the CFTC or whether they are securities subject to securities laws or neither, or even on what criteria should be applied in making the decision. This uncertainty has persisted despite the fact that cryptocurrency exchanges have been around for a number of years. And the reality is the regulators want crypto to be whatever they want it to be in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever is most convenient for what they're trying to accomplish, which in this case is destroying the cryptocurrency industry. So if it's mm-hmm. helpful for it to be a commodity, then they'll call it that. If it's helpful for it to be a security, they'll call it that. If it's helpful in the case of the Crypto 6 for it to be funds, they'll call it that.
Mm-hmm.
That's very true.
What else? Meanwhile, our industry continues to...
So the only answer, really, is that this government has to go.
It will eventually.
Scumbags...
So I'm in New Hampshire.
Need to have their power taken from them, and if and when you try to take their power from them, they're going to come and try to kill you. So be ready to kill them right back.
Well,
that's the only answer.
I understand that you're frustrated.
I understand you disagree.
I definitely disagree with that.
But yeah, that's not my opinion either.
I think they are ready for that. They're trained for that. That's what they want you to do. They want people to get violent with them because they want an excuse to get even more violent with you. The best way out is to get out, which is to say to leave the union by political means, if you want to stay physically in the United States. If you aren't willing to put in for a secession movement, then your best bet is to just get up and leave, is to go to, you know, some crypto friendly jurisdiction. Go to, you know, St. Kitts if you're a big Bitcoin casher. Well, go to.
But not being in the United States doesn't mean they won't come after you.
That's true.
Remember, the Bush administration committed massive war crimes, and the only person in prison for them is Julian Assange. Well, who has never set foot in the United States, certainly never committed a crime in the United States.
Good point.
But yet, these monsters think they rule the world, and there is no place where you can be safe for them while they are alive.
You know, whether or not whether or not you're morally justified in that stance, it's not the strategically smart move. So it's not one that
it's not a winner.
It's not the direction to go.
But I don't disagree with you as far as your point that they can get you pretty much anywhere you go. Unless you go to Russia, they seem to not really want to touch Edward Snowden there in Russia. But Do Kwon, another story I had tonight. I don't know if it's the SEC who's bringing the charges there. He's the guy who was behind the sad failure of Terra UST, which was the world's most popular and successful in its time, which was a year ago, stablecoin. It had risen to the number three largest stablecoin in the world, and that was why they had to take it down. Now, ostensibly, the guy behind FTX did the dirty work here and managed to use his customer funds to somehow destroy UST, and I don't know exactly how that he went about doing that, but it had to do with like buying and selling and somehow crashing the market to the point where it went into a death spiral and could never it depegged and it never came back to its dollar peg, the stable coin, and it was like a $40 billion, you know, straight to zero essentially.
Can you clarify, was that that wasn't the decentralized stable coin?
It was. Okay. That was the world's most successful decentralized stable coin. And now its founder, Do Kwon, has been arrested in Montenegro, which I had to look up to see where the hell that was. It's like somewhere in, I think, Eastern Europe or near Asia. But Montenegro arrested him as he attempted to cross a border with apparently fake papers, a fake passport from, I think it was Costa Rica. He had multiple fake IDs apparently on him or in his bags there, and he's now in custody in Montenegro. They say that they are going to bring charges against him for having a fake ID in Montenegro. He is wanted in South Korea for various different charges, and just hours after Montenegro picked him up, the U.S. attorneys have brought him an 8-count indictment, including securities fraud, wire fraud, commodities fraud, and conspiracy according to a Reuters report. So all of the weight of not just the U.S. federal government, but the South Korean government and the Montenegro government apparently is now coming down on this guy. And all he did,
wow,
all he did was build a stablecoin, an experimental piece of software that no one ever said was a guaranteed thing. Like, it was working for a while, and then it stopped working.
So it's literally speech. It's not like he was running something, like a centralized exchange.
No, he was not running a centralized exchange.
It was literally a piece
of software. It's his code. Yeah, his code was out there. It failed. His code failed. $40 billion was lost because of it, because of, you know, all the people who believed in it and put a lot of money into it. It was a huge success for a time, and then it failed. And the suggestion is that this was somehow his plan. I think that's ridiculous.
Yeah,
I don't think he had an intention to...
How would that benefit him?
I don't think it did.
How are they going to make an argument that somehow benefited him to... Crazy.
But anyway, it goes to nobody's point that if they want to get you, there's very few places on the planet where they cannot reach you. So back to the story here about Coinbase. Coinbase, once again, trying to defend what they do. They've got this blog post outlining that they tried to talk to the SEC. They told them, look, here's what we think you can do to regulate us. We're willing to jump through your hoops. Just tell us what you want us to do. Here, we'll even tell you what hoops we're willing to jump through. You can have us jump through all of them twice, 10 times. We'll do anything. We'll spend millions of dollars just to try to jump through these hoops. And the SEC would not confirm what jumps they had to make. They who want to claim that all you have to do is come on in, sit down and talk to us, we'll get you registered, which so far they haven't done for anyone. There's just no opportunity for the cryptocurrency industry to follow a rule set, because there are no rules besides what the SEC just wants to make up on the spot.
The rules don't exist to be followed. The rules exist to destroy anyone who doesn't support the status quo.
Yep, there's more coming up here at 603-283-6160. This is Free Talk Live. It is Free Talk Live. You can join the show here and bring up whatever you want. We're talking about the impossibility for these poor developers, these entrepreneurs in the cryptocurrency industry who just want to be able to focus on doing what they do. They want to be able to spend their time in their day programming, doing customer service, doing the things that they want to do to advance their ideas in the world of cryptocurrency. But no, instead, they have to spend millions of dollars and God knows how many hours trying to jump through the lawsuits that they're being brought by the SEC. Not jump through the regulatory hoops, because the SEC refuses apparently to actually provide any regulatory hoops. Instead, preferring to just simply say, well, you guys got to figure it out. Meanwhile, we're going to sue you to death. And they, Coinbase, of course, probably the largest company in the space of being cryptocurrency exchange in the United States, has now been targeted by the SEC. And in a detailed blog post, which we've been sharing with you here tonight, Coinbase has basically said, look, we tried to do what they wanted us to do. We asked them to tell us what to do. They even asked us to tell them what we could do. And they came up with, spent millions of dollars developing a regulatory application system, and then they tried to, you know, give it to them, and the SEC just said absolutely nothing in response.
So it's effectively rule by ex post facto law. Whatever you do, they'll outlaw it after the fact by declaring it illegal, and they'll come after you.
Right.
And it doesn't matter what you do. There is no way to be safe from these monsters.
Right. Oh, they'll change the rules as needed to keep coming after you. In fact, if I recall correctly, in the library case, they said at one point they didn't want to provide the registration rules or whatever, because then someone would figure out how to get around them.
Wow.
They might even obey them.
Yeah. So it's incredibly dishonest and thuggish what these people are doing, but that's what you should expect from the federal government gang. That's what they do. They destroy the people who are not the connected crowd. And Coinbase did their best to be the connected few. They wanted to be on the inside of all these regulators. They wanted to be chummy. They wanted to be buddy-buddy. They were trying to cozy on up since day one. I always tell this story. I saw it in, I think it was 2013 when Mark and I went to the very first Bitcoin conference.
I remember this.
It may not have been the first ever Bitcoin conference, but it was our first Bitcoin conference.
I remember
conference.
The story anyway.
Yeah. And
I wasn't there, but
we were at one of those soirees where, you know, it's an open bar. You paid a few hundred dollars for the ticket, so they give you an open bar. In this case, it was sponsored by Coinbase and this other company, Trade Hill, which subsequently went out of business. But I was standing there as this guy, Brian Armstrong, and I remember what he looks like because he looks like an old friend of mine who also happened to be named Brian from high school. So, like, I specifically remember him and the other guy, Trade Hill. I think he was Orion. And then there was this tall, skinny, older woman who's an attorney standing there. And the three of them were talking, and I'm standing there too, and I'm just listening as they're all talking about how they're going to form a White Hats Club and they're going to join together to tell the federal government that they are going to reject any money from the Silk Road, and they're going to tag certain bitcoins as bad bitcoins and other bitcoins as good bitcoins.
Whatever happened with that?
I don't know if it ever went anywhere because Trade Hill went under, and maybe they I don't know. Maybe it just never got around to doing it, or they figured they'd curry favor in some other way. But that was what they were thinking at the time, was that they were going to show the federal government how obedient they are, and we're going to help fight the war on drugs, and we're here to stop the bad bitcoins, and we're going to join together for this. And I just stood there and listened to it quietly. So, yeah, I mean, they've been trying to do this for as long as they have been in existence, and this is their reward, is going to be a slap in the face by the SEC in the form of what is likely to be a pending lawsuit. That is the point of what they call the Wells Notice that they received on Wednesdays, to give them a heads up of, get ready, because a lawsuit's coming, and if you don't settle like Kraken did, their competitor, for $30 million... Well, Kraken decided to settle on that case because to fight it, they figured would cost more than $30 million. So they were just like, you know what? This isn't worth it. We're probably not going to win this. We're going to spend way more money on lawyers just trying to fight this thing. And all we have to do is turn off our staking. Fine. We'll just turn off staking. Say, sorry, U.S. users. We'll still do it for everybody else in the world. Anybody else that's got a Kraken account, you can still do staking. But if you're in the U.S., sorry, you're screwed.
So it's not just an attack on the crypto industry. It's also an attack on America.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Because
the American people.
It means that the American people will be cheated of the opportunities that everyone else will have.
That's right.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Everyone else can do staking.
Yeah.
Americans, well, not an option.
They can provide services. American companies can't provide staking services.
Well,
so.
Right. And the odds that they're going to go after you for doing staking on your own personal computer, probably pretty small, because they're not going to know about that, and you're a small fry by comparison. They're not going to extract millions of dollars out of the average, you know, staking person. So I'm not saying you can't do staking. You just can't have somebody else do it for you on like a business level. So they're going to find out about that, any company that's doing staking as a service, and they're going to go after them. And they're going to have their heads on the stakes. They got Kraken. They're going after Coinbase. And they're just going to point to the heads and say,
always done by a third party? How do you do staking?
Oh, no, no. You can do it yourself. That's the whole point.
Okay.
It's unusual to do it with a third party.
I'm thinking about this, and because I'm thinking you're handing your money over to somebody else, basically.
You can mine yourself, too.
Okay.
But most people would rather have somebody else do it for them. Staking, if you know how to run a full node,
because
you can do
staking. Staking is decentralized, but they're providing a service to access the staking, basically, which is what
they just do the staking for you.
And
in order to do staking, you should have a computer running 24 hours a day.
Right.
The average person probably doesn't have that, or they don't want to do it. Maybe they have a computer at home, but they don't want to run it all day.
It's easier
or,
to click a few buttons on a web page than it is to set up a computer to
and
run
basically
software.
You would give the staking provider, in this case Kraken or Coinbase, 5% or something. So they get a cut, and they just do the work for you. But the bad part is they also hold your coins.
Which is extremely dangerous, because as people have come to hopefully understand in the FTX case, you will lose those coins, or in the Silk Road case, you will lose those coins. Not Silk Road. What was the one that decade ago that
failed?
Mt. Gox. Mt.
Gox. Yeah.
Or in the Mt. Gox case, or what other ones have gone under? Because it's not like this is the first time.
What, crypto exchanges?
Yeah, exchanges have gone under, or, yeah.
I mean, there's been several. There was a guy in Canada who disappeared mysteriously. And then, you know, supposedly turned up dead, but they question whether...
There's been a handful of pretty big exchanges that have failed over the years, and people have lost crypto, because they didn't really have crypto. They had IOUs mm-hmm. for crypto, and yep. if the company goes under that has the IOU, you have the IOU with, well, guess what? You don't... You'll never get that crypto.
See it again. Yeah. So, back to the Coinbase blog post here, where they're talking about how these... SEC has just basically been a stick in the mud. They're not doing anything, and then they attack them later on after, you know, not being able to figure out what to do to obey their stupid rules. They say, meanwhile, our industry continues to see new conflicting statements from regulators instead of actual rules. The chair of the CFTC, which is the, what is that, the commodity
futures trading? Futures trading. Yeah. Exchange.
They testified to Congress that Ethereum is a commodity, which the public has long understood to be the case. Then FTC or CFTC Commissioner Quintenz has said that, quote, the SEC has no authority over pure commodities or their trading venues, whether those commodities are wheat, gold, oil, or crypto assets, unquote. The current SEC chair recently opined that perhaps Bitcoin is the only digital asset commodity, which is what I told you guys earlier, and mm-hmm. here it's referenced in their blog post, which is entirely at odds with the position of the CFTC. If our regulators cannot agree on who regulates which aspects of crypto, the industry has no fair notice on how to proceed. Against this backdrop, it makes no sense to threaten enforcement actions against trusted public companies like Coinbase, who are committed to playing by the rules. Well, yes, it does make sense if their goal is to completely destroy cryptocurrency business in the United States and intimidate people, members of the public, into not using it.
I'm not sure if this is an interesting one, because I'm not sure if certainly I think they would and are trying to kill it. I don't necessarily know if they themselves think that they're going to be able to kill it, but they can certainly put a dent in they can make it difficult for people to get on board, for sure.
Well, they're trying to intimidate people as well, right?
Like, absolutely.
If it's scary enough to where exchanges are shutting down, exchanges are going out of business, that's going to send out some shockwaves into the average investors. Like, oh, well, I've heard about FTX, and then I heard about Coinbase, and then I heard about, you know, the government doesn't like this stuff. So that's going to scare away potential buyers, especially the institutional ones, right? Because the cryptocurrency industry is kind of hoping that a lot of these institutional buyers, like, you know, what are these funds or whatever that people invest in, they're hoping that they're going to buy cryptocurrency as part of their investments. And if it seems like a real shaky regulatory system, they're not going to touch it.
Mm-hmm. That's why people don't invest in third world countries. It's called regime risk.
Yes.
Yeah.
It could be nationalized.
And the only solution to regime risk is regime change.
It makes, he says, even less sense to threaten enforcement actions unless an industry participant concedes that non-securities can be regulated by the SEC. And that's for Congress to decide. They go on to say that the bottom line is Coinbase doesn't list securities or offer products to our customers that are securities, and I think the SEC is going to disagree with that. Coinbase has a rigorous process to analyze and review each digital asset before making it available on our exchange. See, the thing is, in the library case, one of the things we learned from our conversation with Jeremy Kaufman here on the air after the ruling had come out that that library had lost the case is that the SEC claims that simply because, even though there's all these utilities to the library token, that simply because library had some of its own token was enough for them to say this is a security. They said that.
I mean, that's crazy.
They said that giving away, because remember, security is supposed to be something that could go up and down in value. You could lose money on
it. It's supposed to be tied to the company. If the company does good, then you somehow profit.
That's what you would think.
But that's not how you know the library is versus the company, because you can have a security in the library and
like stock.
Right, you could
have
stock. Exactly. Yeah. But at the same time, somebody who doesn't, who just has a token, they have no financial interest.
They have no financial interest. They don't have any voting power.
It was never sold to them that way. Apparently, that didn't matter.
Apparently, that didn't matter. Just the fact that they had, you know, a pre-mine or whatever. They had some number of millions or whatever of library tokens, and it didn't matter that they were giving them away. Because you would say, oh, well, sure, maybe you could see that if they were selling these things and telling people that they could go up in value, then that's a security. But they were giving them away. But apparently, according to Jeremy, in the interview we had with him, that counts as a sale.
How does you giving could lose your nothing count as a sale?
Right. You could lose the free thing that we gave to you.
That's crazy.
Because when you join library, they give you like 50 tokens for free.
Right.
But that apparently was a sale of a security, according to the SEC. And the judge found in their favor. So that's how insane this is. You can't see. The thing is, we've tried to just look at the definition of a security, and it seems real simple, like we were just talking about. A thing that's tied to is the success or failure of a company that gives you some sort of say in how that, you know, company does things in the future, like a stock. But no, it's apparently a much wider definition when it all comes down to it, and even gifts are securities.
Yeah, they try to interpret things they actually use this term in court, most favorably to the government.
Oh yes, that's right. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. The other thing they have to say here is Coinbase. They talk about their rigorous process that they shared with the SEC to become a public company. They analyze whether the asset could be considered a security, and it considers regulatory compliance and information security aspects of the asset. 90%+ of the assets we review are ultimately not listed because they don't meet our standards.
Well, what are your standards?
Well,
they won't tell you.
We're talking about Coinbase in this case. Coinbase has rejected hundreds of assets because they didn't meet them. This is exactly why we're so eager to engage in registration discussions with the SEC to find a home for assets like these that can't currently be listed on any exchange. As we've explained before, our staking services are not securities under any legal standard, including the Howey test, which assesses whether a product is an investment contract. We first presented our staking services to the SEC in 2019, then twice more in 2020. We were largely met with silence. Until this investigation, we had heard no concerns at all from the SEC about our staking services. So they say, tell us the rules and we will follow them. This is exactly what Library said, by the way. Mm-hmm. Give us an actual path to register and we will register the parts of our businesses that need registering. In the meantime, the U.S. cannot afford for regulators to continue to threaten the good actors in the crypto industry for doing the same legal and compliant things they've always done. This unfair approach will only drive innovation, jobs, and the entire industry overseas. And that much they are absolutely right about.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are in the United States now, and you are a cryptocurrency entrepreneur, you need to reconsider seriously where you're located at this point.
What's interesting too is
they can get you in another country. So
it also drives the industry to decentralization, and I think we have some examples of this, although I'm not sure if I want to talk about the examples I'm thinking of. There are platforms out there, we'll say BitPay as an example,
it's a company that allows people to accept crypto at the point of sale.
Right. But other companies out there have decentralized or at least made their services non-custodial in order to...
Like AnyPay.
Okay.
That's like not AnyPay. A secret.
Like AnyPay.
That was a change they made pretty quickly.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Because they saw this coming and they didn't want...
Right. But this is the perfect example. Because it, you know, ultimately it's not gonna go away just because you regulate it to death. It's just going to change. It was the foundation of Bitcoin was decentralization in the first place. And the thing is, it got more centralized, at least the services, than Bitcoin was. But that doesn't mean that those services can't be decentralized too. And they're already going in that direction. And the more regulations you add, the faster it's going to go in that direction. And
that's true.
It might be a good thing.
Regulations. They're adding non-regulations. They're adding,
like a looming threat, basically.
Yeah, basically threats with no escape route.
Yeah.
You know, they're rules without any way of compliance. You know, if it's impossible to comply, then the only thing you can do is go underground and hide, unless you're going to fight back.
You know what's one of the things that's interesting I was thinking about earlier is about how we were talking about decentralized stablecoin and they're going after the developer, right? And the question is, why are they going after him so harsh, like, by comparison, right? Like how many countries are after him? There was South Korea,
multiple
the
countries.
United States, and Croatia. What was it?
Montenegro, where he got picked up.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, you got three different countries. Like, that's more than most people when they go after him.
Yeah. It was an international manhunt for this guy.
Right. And we're talking about speech. We're talking about code. Okay.
But meanwhile, George Bush murdered 1 million people in Iraq, and he's still invited to all the best dinner parties.
Oh yeah, he's playing golf. The point here is very clear, right? Like, this guy, Do Kwon is his name, the guy from Terra. He threatened the central bank's monopolies or oligopoly, whatever you want to call it. He threatened the Federal Reserve in a way that crypto has not yet threatened the Federal Reserve. Like, Bitcoin is a danger to the status quo of banking, but Bitcoin isn't a stand-in for the United States dollar. As much as the federal, you know, FBI wants to pretend like it's currency, it's not currency because it's not government money, and Bitcoin doesn't pretend to be government money. It is most definitely, I think, defined as a commodity. But the stable coins are crypto tokens that want to stand in for the dollar. And so the fact that Do Kwon invented a way to invent something that was valued at a dollar, but it's not a dollar and not backed by a dollar. He essentially made a way of creating dollars out of thin air that wasn't really dollars.
Bitcoin is
so doing what the government already does.
Bitcoin is 1.0. And this decentralized cryptocurrency.
Sadly, they haven't updated Bitcoin since. I don't even know if it's at 1.0,
Well, they have. They just call it BCA.
Well, I'm talking about from a technological perspective.
Yeah.
And probably
it's the Ford.
Monero is probably 2.0, and stablecoin 3. I don't know. It's kind of a difficult one because you need to merge all three probably to really get like
Well, interestingly, there's a Monero fork called Haven that has a stablecoin.
That's 3.0. That's the 3.0.
Now, as I understand it, you know, I've been following some of the development on it. As I understand it, they've been having trouble like keeping it pegged, so it's still kind of janky as to whether or not. I don't know where it's at right now.
Sure.
I know that they're working on developing it, but that would be the real holy grail for stablecoins.
Right.
It would be an anonymous stablecoin that can hold its peg. But for right now, it's that whole holding the peg thing that's the real trick with these decentralized stablecoins. By the way, it's also a trick for the centralized ones, as we found out recently with Coinbase's stablecoin, USDC, that lost its peg down to 87 cents from a dollar when their bank, Silicon Valley Bank, one of their six banks, went under and they lost $3 billion of their dollars in that process.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny because if we compare it to like fiat currencies also have issues when it comes to maintaining their value, and they're actually designed to go down, but it's even on the downward, you know, even as they're designed to go down, they don't want them to go down too fast, too quick.
Right.
But often they do end up going down too fast,
hyperinflation.
Too quick. Yep. Well, not always hyperinflation, but like, for example, the Canadian dollar dropped 40% over like 4 years, which was faster than it should. Currently, it's something like 18-20%, you know, as far as the U.S. dollar, has been declining, where they're aiming for 2-3% is at least that's officially is what they say they aim for. So
Canadians inflating 18%? Is that what you're saying?
No. Two different examples. The Canadian dollar dropped about 40% over 4 years, I believe, a number of years ago.
You mean compared to the U.S. dollar?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the U.S. dollar lost, you know, usually it's designed to lose about 2-3% of value a year. Well, it's not. It's losing something like 18-20% of value a year, depending
that
on what
be,
numbers you're looking at.
Yeah, I was going to say
what
that
scale
would be
you're using. But
that would be the older scale. Their official numbers are like 6-9% in the last year.
Yeah.
Speaking of the dollar stable coins, did you guys hear about Custodia Bank? Do you know what that is?
Mm-mm.
So there's this lady named Caitlin Long. She actually used to live here in the Cheshire County area by coincidence. She was a Free Stater. She ended up moving out to Wyoming and got involved in the Wyoming statutes that they updated back in, I think, 2019, which made Wyoming the most friendly place for cryptocurrency businesses to move in the United States. Sadly, yeah. New Hampshire is not that place. Wyoming mm-hmm. is. New Hampshire's trying to adopt some of the Wyoming laws now here, and Keith Ammon has been working on that here. But Caitlin Long was one of the people, and she's been to the crypto conferences that some of us went to here in New Hampshire when Bruce Fenton was doing those conferences. So you may have actually met her at some point. But anyway, she founded this company called – it's now called Custodia Bank, and they put in an application with the Federal Reserve. And what they did was they formed this bank in Wyoming because Wyoming has a special depository, I forget what the I stands for, insurance company or something like that. It's a bank, but it's not a bank, but it's essentially a bank. Anyway, it's something that's special to Wyoming. And so they went there to form this thing in Wyoming. They formed it. They jumped through the hoops. They filled out all the forms. They did everything right. And then they applied. So they created this bank in Wyoming, and then they said, all right, well, we want to join the Federal Reserve System. We want to be able to send a wire transfer. We want to be able to receive wire transfers, right? They want to be part of that system. And they applied for that. And then the Federal Reserve sat on it, and they sat on it, and they sat on it for years, for 2 years. And then they finally came out with their rejection letter. Yeah.
And they broke the law in the process, if I recall.
They're being sued now by
Custodia. They're required to respond within a certain amount of time, and they did not respond within that time.
That's correct.
And then they rejected it.
Yep. Well, now the Federal Reserve has released a statement. Again, they've got another statement out explaining why they've rejected Custodia Bank. And you guys are going to love this. So I'll share this with you coming up here in a moment. In the height of these bank failures that we're seeing across the United States.
And at least according to a number of people, including Kim Iverson and Barney Frank, these aren't bank failures. These are hit jobs on banks.
On the crypto-friendly banks.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And so Custodia is the definition of a crypto-friendly bank. They're founded by crypto people for the purposes of banking crypto people. But there's an interesting detail about how they were going to work, how they were going to have actual reserves at this particular institution. And we'll get into that coming up here in a moment. And that may be one of the reasons why they were rejected. There's more coming up here. This is Free Talk Live, 603-283-6160.
Free Talk Live.
Free Talk Live. You can join the show here. The number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. You can join us online. Just head over to freetalklive.com. And you can enjoy the features we have there for you. Tonight, it's Ian and Chris.
And nobody.
We're going to go back to your phone calls and thoughts, but I was going to tell you about the latest in the Custodia Bank saga. Again, we're talking about these companies the federal government has been targeting. Coinbase is the latest to be targeted by the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission. Even after Coinbase basically said, look, tell us what to do. We'll jump through all the hoops. We love government. We just want to be part of government. And we're so excited to spend millions of dollars to obey your regulations. And the SEC didn't say anything back to them. And they now are suing Coinbase. We don't have the copy of the lawsuit yet because they haven't gotten to that stage, but they sent them what's called a Wells notice to essentially put them on notice that they should expect a copy of a lawsuit to be served relatively shortly. So we'll keep you in the loop as that develops. But in related news, Custodia Bank, which is this special depository insurance company, I think is what it stands for, in Wyoming. They got a special carve-out in the Wyoming law where you can make a bank, but it's not really called a bank, but it kind of is basically a bank. And that's what they created in Wyoming for like crypto companies to come in there and do that. And so some of these entrepreneurs, they did that. They created Custodia Bank and they applied after they created it in Wyoming. They applied for Federal Reserve membership, meaning that they can then send and receive wire transfers and ACH transfers and things like that. They'll have access to the system. And they were denied after waiting for a couple of years, as you pointed out, Chris, longer than statutorily allowed. The Federal Reserve was supposed to, or Treasury or whoever it was, whichever government bureaucracy, was supposed to deny them or approve them within a certain time frame, and they didn't. So there is a lawsuit, I believe, that Custodia Bank is bringing against them at this time. But meanwhile, the Federal Reserve has now put out some sort of a statement, and this was published on A. Pompliano, Pomp, on Twitter. He's got an excerpt from it here, and he says, Custodia Bank sought Fed approval as a bank that holds $1.08 for every $1 deposited.
No, wow, 108% reserves.
Yes, no fractional reserve lending, no nonsense. They were denied. The Fed blamed bank runs as one reason that they denied Custodia's application. The irony,
because they would be a safe haven if the fractional reserve banks were going under. So they would protect consumers, and the government doesn't want consumers protected.
So here's the excerpt from the actual... Wow. Yeah, it's interesting.
That is just mind-blowing. Yeah. Not that they did it, but that they were actually that honest about it, that was the problem. I would expect them to just assassinate the people involved.
Here it is in their own words.
It's not too late. They might still do it.
Well, they might, but now they've told some truth. Mm. So, and I mean, they might be charged because truth is treason in the empire of lies.
Here's the excerpt from the Federal Reserve's explanation. Quote, additionally, the admission of an uninsured deposit-taking institution to Federal Reserve membership is unprecedented since the creation of Federal Deposit Insurance in 1933 and requires careful consideration of the heightened micro and macro prudential risks of wholly uninsured deposit-taking. The absence... So, again, they're not
uninsured,
members...
Uninsured, except that they have 100% returns. Yeah. Reserves. So there's nothing
Why
to
do you need
insure.
The insurance?
Yeah.
You know, this is an interesting question, saying uninsured, because what if they go and get an insurance policy from an insurance company, because you can get private...
You can get private insurance.
Right,
sure.
That has nothing to do with the government.
Great question.
Wow.
Of course, they didn't know, so they might not
They're
have that.
They're probably referring to FDIC insurance.
I suspect the Fed is.
I'm sure that'll be their next response.
Doesn't make sense or apply when you're not running the fractional reserve scam in the first place.
Right. I mean, you would still need insurance against, like, robbery or whatever, right? Like,
right.
So if somebody comes in and puts a gun to your teller's head and then they empty the vault or
there's,
something like that.
You know, it's interesting because there's also there's two different organizations for FDIC. It's not called FDIC for the credit unions.
NCUA.
I mean. Mm-hmm. Right. So there's actually different insurance already out there. Mm-hmm.
But again, NCUA wouldn't apply because it's not a credit union.
Sure.
And they're not really a bank either. And they would probably say, if they got insurance from Lloyd's of London or whoever, yep, instead of the FDIC, they would probably turn their nose up at that and say, well, you can't trust private insurers. We can only accept our own insurance.
You can only trust the psychopaths who won't even tell you what the rules are.
So here's the next sentence. There's only a couple more sentences here on their excuse for why they rejected Custodia Bank. And this is just an excerpt from God knows how many pages. Quote, the absence of deposit insurance coverage at Custodia could increase the firm's risk of runs and
how?
Contagion. I have no idea how. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
If you ask 100% reserve institution for your money,
they've
have
got
it.
Yep.
They this don't is... need to be insured against not having it.
And the final statement. This is especially concerning because the global crypto asset industry on which Custodia has focused its business model is highly susceptible to runs, as recent events have demonstrated.
Oh, wow. It's so much more complicated than that.
And when they say runs, they're talking about targeted assassinations by the psychopaths. Wow.
Yep. So right there under the, you know, in the situation that's happening right now as Federal Reserve banks, member banks are losing, you know, billions in customer funds, as Pomp points out in his post of this. This is while people are literally doing bank runs on banks that don't have the customer funds, while this bank would have, this one would have had 108%.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but some of those banks weren't connected to crypto, like Credit Suisse, right?
Credit Suisse, not that I know of. So this is bigger than crypto. and in fact, there was another story that came out.
Which just makes that statement all the more insane.
Yeah, and there was another story that came out over the weekend. I believe it was Stanford that did a study showing that 186 banks are even worse off than Silicon Valley Bank.
Well, yeah, Silicon Valley Bank was also rated, as being one of the more stable or better banks.
Mm-hmm.
It's based on fear, not necessarily on whether or not it's a sound bank.
Sure. They went down because they had a run. The other ones would go down too if there would be a run
right.
If there's fear
caused by Twitter people, cause a run, it doesn't matter, how stable the bank is,
They're not.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, I'm not a Trump supporter, but I've been seeing things on Twitter saying that the way to protest the trumped up charges against Trump, that there's an ironic statement, is to pull your money out of the bank.
Absolutely.
And I fully support that, not necessarily to protest what's happening to Trump, but to protest what's happening to anybody who tries to exist without enriching the monsters.
I would say don't pull your money out of the bank. Exchange your money for your dollars, your government currency, for something else of value.
Yeah, you've got to take it out of the bank to do that, though, because the banks don't have anything of value. All they have is lies and favoritism.
We've been talking about this. We actually had Aaron Day. Is that who you're seeing it from online? Aaron Day, the presidential candidate and free stater?
I don't know. I mean, I've seen it from just random people
because he's been hitting it hard
on Twitter. But okay.
he's on there every day. I don't know if you guys are. Have you ever met Aaron back in the day?
Back in the day.
Yeah.
I believe that I have met him. I know he ran for Senate.
You wouldn't recognize
him
probably now if you saw him because he lost 150 pounds in the last few years. So he'd been really he's really focused on himself and making himself well over the last few years. But he's a free stater. He moved up here, I don't know, more than a decade ago, I think, probably around the time when you moved here, nobody. And he's run for office at the local level. He's run for, like, U.S. Senate as well. And he decided he was going to throw in on the presidential race in the Republican Party. So we actually have an actual free stater running in the Republican primary. He's pro-independence. He's pro ending the war on drugs, and he's pro bank run.
Oh, nice.
He's been hitting this bank run thing hard.
I wonder how many votes in Texas he would get just by saying, "We won't go to war with you if you secede."
That's a great point.
And
now would be a really good time too, because Texas has an independence measure that is going through its state house as we speak. It's been assigned to a committee, and that's as far as it got last time. So we'll see if there's actually a public hearing this time around.
And of course, if he made it into office, and I doubt he would, I mean, they'd kill him before they let him win. But if he did make it into office, it would certainly light a fire under the secessionists to escape while they could.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's like, this may be our last chance to get away from the monsters.
I mean, he knows his chances are probably on the low side, but he says apparently Twitter is...
Lucky for him, it means he might keep
breathing. Yeah, he says his Twitter account is like shadow banned or whatever, so it's not getting the exposure that it should. But man, he's killing it with the memes. I mean, he's out there throwing out bank run memes nonstop.
Wow.
So I think you're probably seeing what he's putting together, because he's definitely trying to, ride Trump's coattails in some of these memes to encourage the Trumpers to go to the banks instead of hit the streets, because that would be way more effective. If you go to a protest, if you go to protest Trump being arrested, you're just going to get caught up in an FBI sting operation. Whereas if you go to the bank and withdraw your money from the bank in large numbers, then you really will make an impact on something.
It's way harder for them to respond to that than the protests.
Yeah, banks will go down, and that's why they're on the Janet Yellen and these characters are on Biden on television over the last couple of weeks saying everything's fine, the banking system's totally safe, it's all okay, because they don't want fear to spread and they don't want lines to form.
And they're even, as I understand it, waiving the limits on FDIC insurance,
yes,
and giving people back full everything coverage they lose.
Yep.
Well, of course, there's a flip side to that, which is the FDIC only has so much money.
$128 billion.
And so if they give those $128 billion to the first banks that fail, then the rest of us are going to be in a position where the banks aren't insured. Okay. Sure.
Well, they'll just print it. Nobody. It's okay.
Well, there's a downside to that as well for them, because they're saying that they can't cut rates because inflation is still too high. So, and this is how the crack up boom works.
What is that?
Is the crack up boom is what von Mises talks about when you go into hyperinflation, which is basically, hyperinflation is how a fiat money empire goes bankrupt, okay? Because to a fiat money empire, the currency, the dollar, is just an IOU, and nothing can stop them from writing more IOUs. Mm-hmm. They can write more IOUs forever. But once they hit hyperinflation, their IOUs aren't worth anything. So they have to write bigger and bigger and bigger IOUs to find anybody fool enough
to take them,
okay? And that will be expressed by inflation, because the people who get those IOUs are immediately going to try to turn them into real value, which von Mises called the flight to real value, which means they have to turn them into crypto, gold, silver, something of real value. And it's a big question then, what is of real value?
Yeah.
Because everything is denominated in dollars, and everything is going to be not just suffering, but completely unpredictable because of the exceptional conditions going on in the economy. So there, no company will be a safe haven, because you don't know what's going to happen to a company when the currency loses 80% of its value in a month.
Or not only that, how about when their bank goes under and then they have no money to pay their employees? What happens to them then?
Exactly. And the FDIC doesn't have any money to give them, because they've already bailed out the connected people from the previous banks.
Well, what they're doing with this, when you pointed out that the FDIC is going to back all of the account holders at Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank.
Are
both
they
of those
accepting
banks.
People like Coinbase, though? I would imagine they're not going to make them whole.
They said all of the account holders will be made whole at those two banks. However, they have subsequently stated that not every bank will be accepting or will be given this level of coverage. Only the most important, quote-unquote, accounts and banks
so
will
the
be covered.
Political donors.
Correct. Okay. It'll be political. You better believe it. Yeah, so that's where this is going. But what they said was, in their press release about bailing out all of the account holders, as far as how will it be funded, because again, there's only $128 billion in the deposit insurance fund right now, and the first bank that went down, Silicon Valley Bank, was a $200 billion bank. So there's not even enough
money
in there for
that. But that doesn't mean they were $200 billion in the hole. As a matter of fact, they may have been solvent. So it won't necessarily because they'll be able to liquidate all of their assets.
Sure, they have some. Sure, that's a good point.
And their liquidated assets may turn out, once they sell the loans and what have you, they may it may turn out that there's a little bit left for shareholders.
Or they might sell the bank. But anyway, they said that the extra, whatever the overage would be over what's in the deposit insurance fund, would be covered by a, quote, special assessment on the banks. So they're bragging and saying, hey, don't worry, taxpayer, We're not coming after you. Hey, we're not turning on the printing presses here. We're going after the banks. We're going to put a special assessment on
translation.
So that makes the banks less solvent, which may
drive the customers,
the least solvent banks over the edge.
Yes.
And again, they are really between a rock and a hard place. This could be the end game for fractional reserve banking.
So the translation, if I'm understanding this correctly, that means the fees that they charge, the banks charge, are probably going to go up.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
And the interest rates are going to go down. Yep. Like, as though they could go down any further, right? Because they're pretty much in the toilet right now and have been for years. Like, interest rates on savings accounts or whatever, it's like next to zero. So now it'll have to be half of next to zero or something like that.
Wow.
So that's their plan at the moment. Meanwhile,
Treasury bonds are soaring because of the higher...
Which they just raised the
higher interest rate.
And they just raised it another 0.25, right? Like another 25 basis points. Yeah. Even in the height of all these bank failures, the Federal Reserve said, we're jacking up the rates even more.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's going to get interesting.
I don't know if they can pull this one out. They've surprised me before.
Yeah, that's true.
But I don't know if they can pull this one out. This may be the time that the whole S house goes up in flames.
I sure hope so.
As Jim Morrison put it. And it can't happen to a nicer bunch of monsters.
I have to wonder if it does go up in flames. What are the New Hampshire state reps going to say in response?
To secession?
Secession, to, you know, I don't know.
They'll still have an excuse.
Maybe setting up our own banks, you know, independent banks.
Jason Gerhard proposed a state bank this year.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
I don't know if it got voted on by the full state house yet,
though. A state bank, is that like...
Yeah,
North Dakota has one. They've had one for 100 years or something.
I think that's
like
a great idea.
Would that be a private or a government? And
I believe it would be a government.
Sounds like another
entity.
Federal Reserve at the state level.
I think there's actually some benefit to doing a state government bank, and in that you would then end up going through the state government bank as opposed to the FDIC or going through the Fed bank directly. And especially it, and I know this doesn't sound good, but if you force other banks to go through the state bank, the Feds all of a sudden, you know, what are they going to do? They have to cut out every single bank.
I would be very frightened by that, because that puts a lot of big money into the hands of the state legislature, and they are as subject to corruption as anyone else. Even the guys we know and we like are subject to temptation.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think this would be a good question for Jason, and maybe he could call into the show on a Friday and you guys can query him about this. But the way he pitched it, and I'm not going to be the expert on this, but the way he pitched it was the idea is if the state bank, it would be a bank only for the state. It wouldn't allow private accounts. It would be the state essentially loaning itself money rather than coming into TD Bank or something to get funding and then having to pay a ton of money in interest back to the bank. It wouldn't have to pay interest, and so therefore it would keep costs of state projects down because of that. That's, I think, one of the basic concepts.
I misunderstood.
I don't know where they would get the money from in the first place, if it would just be taxes.
What he was trying to do. I thought the idea would be it would be a bank for other banks, like the central
bank. Not a banker's
bank.
No.
Yeah,
no.
A central bank. But the benefit, I think, of that would be is if you force everybody to go to the state.
You're talking about a banker's bank?
In New Hampshire bank, yeah. A state bank for the banks in New Hampshire. If you force them all to go through the state bank, well then... If the Feds say no to accessing things like ACH and wire, well, all of a sudden they've cut out all the banks in New Hampshire from accessing it. It would undermine their ability to influence.
That would be an awful lot of force, though. And the thing is, it's not like
New Hampshire
banks are 2% of the banks in the United States, even though New Hampshire is one state in 50. The population of New Hampshire is less than 1.5 million. And that makes us one out of every 200 Americans.
It does introduce a huge problem, though.
I think it would create some massive risks. I would be very afraid to do that.
It looks like it got inexpedient to legislate on a voice vote, and that was actually yesterday.
Pretty much what I'd expect, but
So it didn't go anywhere. Unfortunately,
that's normal. We can keep bringing it back, and every 2 years, I believe it is.
That's correct. So, all right, let's go to the phones here. We got Major Payne on the line. Major, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead.
Yeah, Ian. Hey, you stole one of my funnies. I was going to say them boys should have been insured with Lloyd's of London.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They were created to insure the uninsurable back in the shipping days.
Yeah, unfortunately, private insurance, the one thing they will not insure against is government attack. So,
yeah.
It's good
and
for...
And you can't. It's actually illegal. It's like insuring against, Frankenstein or something. You don't know what he's going
to
do.
Hang on, Major. We'll bring it back here. I know you had another point you wanted to hit on. We'll continue as well. The SEC going after one of the largest supposedly decentralized exchanges called SushiSwap. That's one of the other people they're targeting. There's more coming up here in moments. This is Free Talk Live. It's Free Talk Live. We got time for you. If you want to join the show, you can do that on this number at 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. It's Ian, Chris, and Nobody here tonight. You can join us online as well. Just head over to freetalklive.com and enjoy the features we have for you. At freetalklive.com, we do have our AMPS program, which allows listeners like you to get behind what we do here on Free Talk Live and help us advertise, market, promote, and support this show to help us get the show on more great radio stations. We've got over 170 stations that air the show at various times throughout the week. Of course, we're also online on podcast and live streaming as well. And you can help us spread the message of liberty, peace, freedom, crypto, gold, silver, all the stuff that we like to talk about here. 7 nights a week on broadcast radio and beyond, as Malimber has done. Malimber is one of our silver supporters of the AMPS program. You can join Malimber by going to amps.freetalklive.com. That's amps.freetalklive.com. Get signed up there. That is our Patreon that will allow you to sign up with your credit, your debit card, as long as the banking system still hasn't completely failed, and also PayPal as well. So head over there to amps.freetalklive.com, amps.freetalklive.com. We go back to Major Payne on the line with us here in Michigan. Major, what else was on your mind tonight?
But just a quickie, real quick. Nobody was talking about them overprinting money.
Yeah.
And I remember that there is a $1,000 bill, I think, that they're still printing, but they pretty much just use it bank to bank.
No, they stopped with $1,000 bills years ago.
All right. Well, I used to have a $10,000 Confederate bill.
Wow.
My old man paid like $1.85 for it at an old antique store.
Yeah. That's a great point. Yeah, they used to have $500 and $1,000 bills, and they got rid of those. I don't remember how many decades ago it was, but it was some time ago. And, of course, they used drug dealing as the excuse for it.
See, I mean, the price of toilet paper is going up because they keep printing it.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, too, because they used to use those bills for purchasing land and farms and things in remote areas. So it's kind of humorous that they used drugs to justify killing it, because it's like, well, if you can use drugs to justify killing it, you can use drugs to justify killing cash altogether.
Yes, they can.
Mm.
And maybe they will eventually.
Buddy of mine had a roll of toilet paper years ago, I remember, and it was $500 bills. It might have been after they eliminated them, so they couldn't, say, well, you can't replicate this in a picture and put it on a product, right? Because they'll Shanghai you for that too. Mm.
Well, you can use it on a product, as I understand it, just as long as the product isn't shaped exactly like a dollar bill, like if it's obviously
it
toilet paper. Yeah.
I thought you couldn't show more like 3/4 of the bill or something. They had to be,
It's not any one thing. It's you just have to make sure it's differentiated from a dollar so people can't mistake it for a dollar.
And don't be a political target when you do it.
Yeah. What else, Major?
We got all this civil unrest going on, right? You guys know about the debacle in France.
Oh, yeah. There's huge protests going on. It's still going on in France. Apparently, some government building got burned yesterday in one of the French cities. For listeners that don't know, the frustration in the streets, though, it's not really about a revolution so much, Chris, is that they don't want to work. because there's, you know, lazy socialists there. So the government wants to raise the retirement age from 62 to 64, and that's got people throwing Molotovs and, you know, tipping over cars.
Yeah, I understand that their reasons might not be good reasons to revolt, but a collapsed government's a collapsed government, and I might take
true.
It.
True.
All right, Major, what about it?
One of the good things France has going for it is they're three-quarters nuclear-powered, so their electricity costs them nothing, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah.
As far as comparatively to the rest of the world, right? Mm-hmm. But, so anyway, yeah, King Charles had a trip scheduled to go across Europe, right? And he was going to visit France, and then he was going to go on to Germany. Well, not Macron. I can't remember the cat's name in France there, but he called the king and says, I don't think he should come here. And this was like, you know, the afternoon after they'd burned down the tall town hall in Bordeaux.
Okay.
He was supposed to go for a dinner at Versailles and then take a road trip to the wine country of Bordeaux and have himself a fine old time, watch the maids milk the goats and what's not. But it didn't seem to transpire as safe for the king.
if only there were more places that were unsafe for the kings.
Right.
Well, Ian's right about one thing. The French have been entitled to too many government commodities. I think they're on their third generation of being pretty much a welfare state. They don't want to work more than 4 days.
Yeah.
You can't run a country unless you have entrepreneurs. And an entrepreneur ain't going to put that bit in his mouth at 6 o'clock in the morning if he knows he's going to get the same amount of money as the jackass next door to him that don't get out of bed till noon.
It's a great point, Major. Thank you for the call tonight. Appreciate hearing from you. The number is 603-283-6160. And by contrast, we also have Sarah in New Mexico. Go ahead, Sarah.
Oh, God.
that was a topic, but I kind of want to talk.
That was
about
a topic. That. You're right.
Trinity Broadcast Network. You know the Paul and Jan started that. I really like watching that Christian TV, and his son took over. But I really think that station is definitely anointed by God or something like that. I mean, definitely.
Is this a joke?
No, I think she's serious. She is a Christian. She goes to church.
Okay.
So I think she's serious about that.
For those who don't know, anoint is defined as the act of lubricating a politician already sufficiently slippery.
So you're referring to some television broadcast network called Trinity Broadcast Network, and you believe it is the truly, the true one true word of God.
Well, you know what? They do have something stupid, something political, something that, like news, Christians, news that was kind of ridiculous. It's kind of silly. I mean, they're kind of off and they've done stupid things. But did they have Chuck Smith on the station? I think they made a movie about Chuck Smith.
I don't know who any of these people are. So sometimes you're saying it is the word of God, but sometimes it's silly and it's not?
Yeah, some of the reports on Israel.
Could it be that God just has a sense of humor? I mean, have you seen the platypus?
Well, I mean, some of it is it's just amazing of all the testimony that they have, like all these Bible prophecy. It never came true. Nobody knows what the Revelation is talking about. Everybody's got their own interpretation of Gog and Magog. Nobody knows.
And what is your interpretation, Sarah? Like, when's the world going to end and all that?
You know, I don't really think so. And then the second coming of Christ means that he's coming, he's revealing himself through the word. That's the second coming in our, when we read the word. It's not, he's going to appear in disguise, but they still preach that. And the stations, it has a deeper revelation that, and then the battle, the Armageddon is.
She is even more disjointed when talking about religion than normal. I got to say, I'm having a tough time.
My second coming was like 15 minutes after my first.
I'm still trying to follow.
I think I was 13 at the time.
Idea that there are Christian communists out there, given that the communists, didn't they persecute the Christians and religious you know, leaders.
Oh yeah, they
yes they did. Yeah, that's a great point. Sarah is a self-professed communist. So does that mean you're going to persecute yourself, Sarah, when the time comes?
Well, I mean, the by the way, that France thing, did you know that's one?
No, you don't get to change the topic on this. Because you do call yourself a communist, and they absolutely did persecute Christians.
Yeah. Well, yep. They said that religion is the opiate of the masses. They didn't add that food is the opiate of the massive.
Well, the Communist Party in America, we accept faith here. We'll take anybody now.
Oh, for now.
Yeah, currently. Now. Wait until you succeed.
The communists need support, so they're going to take you now. You don't know what the communists did to their own people in Mother Russia, do you?
I mean, they would take anybody in 1917, too. They teamed up with the anarchists, and then the first thing they did once they won was kill all the anarchists.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, they probably sent a bunch to the gulags.
That's true.
Yeah. You just don't know about that, do you, Sarah? Or do you deny that that's true?
Well, I mean, the authentic communists, they took out religion, yes. But the reformed communists now, we'll take people of faith.
Now you can trust them. Okay, I gotcha. All right, thanks, Sarah, for the call tonight. Because history totally won't repeat itself. Right?
No, history never repeats itself.
Never. The number, if you want to join us, 603-283-6160. All right, so who else are they targeting? The SEC.
Just to respond to your last comment about history, those who do not study history are doomed to repeat it. Yeah. Whereas those who do study history are doomed to stand by helplessly while the people who didn't study history repeat it anyway.
Sushi Dao. Do you guys know what Sushi Swap is? You ever heard of Sushi Swap?
Don't recall, but probably I've heard about it.
Sushi seems like it would make a bad currency because
it
really doesn't keep.
Coin Gecko. I'm just going to look up sushi right now because that's their that is the name of their coin, I think, as well. They've got, like, you know, a lot of these systems. They have their own token that you can trade on. Anyway, SushiSwap is a decentralized cryptocurrency exchange with $24 million in volume in the last 24 hours. So it is, you know, it's up there. It's definitely, let's get a list of all of the decentralized exchanges and rank by volume, and we'll see where they rank. They're definitely in the top 20. Okay, so this is like number 19 on the list of decentralized exchanges on the planet right now. They've been targeted by the SEC. Sushi Dao and Head Chef...
How do you target a decentralized exchange?
Very carefully.
They did a little bit of centralization, and apparently...
so it's not really a decentralized exchange.
Apparently, one of the guys that runs the thing is public, unlike Satoshi Nakamoto,
not a wise move.
Smart enough to stay anonymous. Mm. Head Chef Jared Gray and Sushi Dao have been served with a subpoena by the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. This is according to Coindesk.com. The decentralized autonomous organization revealed Tuesday. Gray proposed creating a Sushi Dao legal defense fund in a forum post, saying that it would, quote, cover legal costs for core contributors, unquote. The proposal recommends making $3 million worth of Tether available. Tether is a stable coin, by the way, for those that don't know. It's a dollar supposedly backed crypto token. With another million worth of USDT available in case the initial $3 million are used up. Quote, we're cooperating with the SEC. We do not intend to comment publicly on ongoing investigations or other legal matters.
That's the first mistake.
Why should we give you $3 million? Why would we give... Right. I mean, look, no, I don't mean we. I'm not on this exchange. But why, if you were a part of the Sushi Dao, would one give these people any money if they're not willing to comment on what's going on?
The Dao which can be spoken is not the true Dao.
Now you're referring to the actual Tao Te Ching. We're cooperating, they say. Under the proposal, the fund would pay for attorney's fees and other costs for any core contributors who've been part of the project since April of 2022. When Sushi 2.0 was ratified, the funds would be paid out until any legal proceedings are ended. One of the initial comments on the forum post asked how the Dao, known as Sushi, was subpoenaed, with the user saying they didn't receive it despite being a member of the Dao. And honestly, I'd like to get an answer to that question as well. How indeed were they subpoenaed? I presume they went after any identifiable humans and just called that subpoenaing the decentralized autonomous organization. So can one of y'all describe for our listeners what a decentralized autonomous organization is?
Not well.
Yeah.
But basically my understanding is that it is a organization that probably operates on some kind of proof of stake and allows people to vote on what the organization will be doing. But the details of how they work, I got nothing.
Yeah, it's something like, correct me if I'm wrong here, but your virtual, you know, your cryptocurrency is held effectively by an organization that's decentralized that they then vote on how to pay out, I believe. Something
yes.
along those lines, right?
So
I'd love to see what Investopedia or somebody has to say about answering that question, see how close we were.
A decentralized autonomous organization is an alternative to the classic centralized organization structure. So in a CEO and a board of directors and a CTO and, you know, all these positions in a typical top-down hierarchical corporation, the decentralized autonomous organization replaces that with no CEO and no high-end, you know, entities or whatever. They're all, as you suggested.
No C-suite.
Right. So as you suggested, nobody, they are essentially making decisions through voting, and they usually vote based on staking of a particular coin. I believe in the SushiSwap's case, they have something called, I think it's called Sushi, but I'm not sure on that. There's a token that's associated with the exchange that they have. And if you accumulate these tokens, you get voting power in making decisions on how this decentralized organization is operating.
See, when that goes good, it might go very good. But if it goes bad, it's really going to stink.
I'm just looking at this thread here about the legal defense fund and what the answers are to the question of how did a decentralized autonomous organization get subpoenaed? And it just seems like they just tried to identify whoever they could possibly identify and serve them with paperwork. Said, well, we identified you as a programmer, and so you get to represent the decentralized autonomous organization.
Yeah, I suspect they went to the about page and of the you know, developers, and they found out that way or looked at commit.
This has got to be a first, though. I've never heard of a DAO, a decentralized autonomous organization, being sued by any governmental agency at this point, because normally it's difficult to put your finger on those.
It
things,
sounds
right?
like they're not really suing the decentralized organization or the.
No, they named them. The DAO. They named the Sushi DAO in the case.
Which they can name organizations that don't exist on paper. That's kind of the whole basis of RICO.
Yeah, and then they merge those people. Yeah, you know, it sort of kind of makes me think of the Crypto 6 case a little bit, in that they sort of merged people together that were only very loosely connected and called it a conspiracy.
Yeah, I hope if there's somebody involved with the Sushi DAO that actually knows more about this story, I'd love to hear some of the details on this. There's not much, at least on this particular news story, about it, but I wanted to bring it up as another example of the SEC going after cryptocurrency organizations, and in this case, going after a decentralized, supposedly decentralized autonomous organization. But it doesn't end there. In other news, the SEC is now suing Tron founder Justin Sun. This guy's a fairly prominent cryptocurrency advocate. He's an entrepreneur. He's a programmer. They're going after him, and they're going after several individuals that apparently were hired to promote Justin Sun's coins, one of which is called Tron. That's his big one. And he hired Lindsay Lohan, the actress, the Hollywood actress, Jake Paul, who is a big YouTube star, apparently, Soulja Boy, and then some other people, including Lil Yachty, Neo, Akon, who's a major music producer.
Those are all syllables.
And Michelle Mason. So some of these people I'm not familiar with, but The celebrities in this case have already, most of them have settled the charges. I saw a story that this Jake Paul instantly told the SEC he would pony up $400,000 just to make this go away. So all of basically most of these people are cracking under the initial pressure. The SEC said in a press release it was suing Sun, the Tron Foundation, the BitTorrent Foundation, and BitTorrent over
Wait,
the sale.
BitTorrent?
Yep. Over the sale of Tronix and BitTorrent tokens. Did you know there was a BitTorrent token?
You know what? I remember there was something that the BitTorrent Foundation, I think it was, or company or whatever, was doing with crypto. Now I think about it. But that was, you know, I actually don't know whatever happened with that.
Well, they're getting sued.
Yeah.
over it by the SEC. And I think Tron had purchased BitTorrent or something like that at some point. I believe Sun.
It was like a reverse, sort of like with these with stocks. You have a reverse where the a smaller company buys a bigger company, basically, because the bigger company is failing, like Red Hat and IBM.
And
Red
then the stock split reverses or whatever.
Well, it basically it's easier to buy a company that's failing to get on the stock exchange.
Oh, than so, try to get on the stock exchange.
Yeah, to go directly on the stock exchange. So
Red Hat bought IBM.
Red Hat bought IBM. Well, I mean, I think it was more it's a little bit more complicated than that, but yeah, something along those lines. It was a reverse merger.
Oh, that's crazy.
They're suing these guys, accusing them of selling and airdropping unregistered securities, fraud, and market manipulation. The regulator described as unregistered crypto asset securities, the BTT and the TRX currencies and tokens. They said that the defendants fraudulently manipulated the secondary market through a, quote, extensive wash trading scheme. Now, I've heard about this wash trading thing before. Do you guys know what it is? Because I'll try to take a crack at it if one of y'all doesn't know it better.
Wash trading is, as I can understand it, is getting into a position and then out of a position so that it's a wash.
I thought it was where they buy their own token to push up the price of it.
Okay,
that's what I thought. That's what I thought it was.
Oh, I'm thinking it's money laundering.
That would definitely be covered by Investopedia. So I would say let's see what they have
look
to
that
say.
One up here.
Yeah, look it up.
Wash trading is a legal type of trading. This, according to Investopedia, where a trader buys and sells a security for the express purpose of feeding misleading information to the market. In some situations, wash trades are executed by a trader and a broker who are colluding with each other, and other times wash trades are executed by investors acting as both the buyer and the seller of the security. So you're basically boosting the volumes, it says here, of the sales to look bigger than they actually are. And apparently they're alleging that happened in the case of Tron and BitTorrent.
Yeah. So basically, if you're doing that repeatedly, then you are getting into the position and getting out of the position so that you can get into the position again. And out of the position again.
According to Sun, who was named Grenada's ambassador to the World Trade Organization last year, they say tried to artificially inflate TRX's trading volume through the wash trading scheme. The SEC alleges by having his own employees, quote, engage in more than 600,000 wash trades of TRX between two crypto asset trading platform accounts that he controlled. According to the court's filing, Sun's Tron Foundation employees conducted the trades. The BitTorrent and Tron Foundations controlled the accounts, and Rainberry employees transferred the funds for trading. What else? So yeah, they went after these celebrities as well. According to the filing, while Sun said on social media that paid celebrities were required to disclose they were being paid, Sun himself arranged the payments to celebrities and knew that those payments were not being disclosed, which is what they were alleging about the celebrities, what they were promoting TRX and BTT without disclosing that they were being hired to do so. What else? The scheme required a significant supply of TRX, which Sun allegedly provided. He is a very wealthy crypto entrepreneur. He also sold TRX into the secondary market, generating proceeds of $31 million from illegal unregistered offers and sales of the token, which, of course, they're going to say was an unregistered security. It's just what they say about all cryptocurrencies, except for Bitcoin, apparently, these days. So in this case, they're claiming more than this was just an unregistered security, which is what they went after Library for, which is what they're going after likely Coinbase for. Wash trading, is this a crime?
It is. I mean, if you did it with stocks, it would be considered a crime. I'm pretty sure.
I've definitely heard of it with stocks.
It's definitely dirty pool because it's creating an illusion
of trading activity that doesn't really exist.
Similar to naked shorting, which creates the illusion of the existence of coin that doesn't really exist.
Whether or not something should be illegal or is illegal are also two different things.
Yeah,
so
I mean, I would definitely call it dirty pool. I don't think it should be illegal because I don't think there should be a government, but I think you should distrust anybody who does it.
Sure. Buyer beware.
Yeah.
You know, just because you see some volume on an exchange doesn't mean that it's legit, right?
Yeah.
And out of time for tonight, I'll put the article up on our social media, social.freetalklive.com. Be sure you follow the @FTL account there. We'll see you tomorrow night online. In the meantime, you can join us at freetalklive.com. Some of you have wanted to support Free Talk Live's mission on a monthly basis, but don't want to support Patreon. Now we have an alternative that also helps our premier streaming platform, Odyssey. Visit video.freetalklive.com and click Join at the top of the channel. You can subscribe for $5 per month, and unlike other subscription services, Odyssey adds their processing fee on top, so it'll cost a little over $5 per month, but Free Talk Live will receive the entire amount you pledged. Higher donation tiers are available if you're feeling so inspired. You'll get a special membership badge that's visible in the Odyssey chat room, and if we get enough supporters, we may enable members-only chat. This new subscription method is a great way to decentralize our direct listener support away from just Patreon and also support a libertarian-run business, Odyssey. Please visit video.freetalklive.com and click Join to subscribe to our Odyssey channel and help support spreading our message around the planet. Visit video.freetalklive.com and click Join today.